Thursday here. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Certifiable Total Recall. Some of you may know it as CTR. Some of you may know it as the best damn podcast in the history of planet Earth, or as I always like to say, any planet. And we're looking at you, Zelnot. I, my friends, am Jason Martin in Bowling Green, Kentucky, along with my partner.
I was actually looking at Uranus.
Oh, aren't you clever?
What? That's an awesome planet. Land of gas.
All right.
No, I am Andrew Fan from recording out of Greenville, South Carolina. What's happening, Jason? What is happening?
Wow, get right to it, huh? What is happening? Guess. What was I doing right before this? And this can tie into another discussion is I have brought back my blog. It is back on a daily basis now. 6 p.m. is the name of my blog, which means, well, around 6 p.m., you'll get new content every day from me. I'm going to do it as a way to get thoughts out there, stay constructive, continue to write, and get some stuff out there that I'd like to really say. And today I brought it back talking about Community, which, of course, is in the news right now for being ripped off of NBC's mid-season schedule. They've said they're going to let them finish the episodes for Season 3 some point in 2012. And what that means to people that understand TV is they're going to give them two or three episodes on Saturday nights at 11 p.m., when nobody's watching, just so that they can fulfill this ridiculous commitment. But while I was vlogging, I was listening to Donald Glover's new rap CD. Somehow I screwed the pooch and just didn't realize that he had this music project going on. I found out through a classmate, actually, in my pop culture class, who was telling me about Donald Glover coming out. I think he got it from a World of Warcraft name generator, is where he got the name of his act, and he calls it Childish Gambino. And it's pretty damn awesome. In the first song, he's talking about Land Before Time dinosaur toys from Pizza Hut, of which I have some, of which I have actually discussed in the last month that particular film and those particular toys. He also talks about finding Toe Jam like Earl. Nice stuff. Like, very interesting stuff. There's still the requisite Yo Girl stuff that, you know, breaks out on most hip-hop, most rap stuff, and all that kind of stuff. But it's clever. He's had mixtapes out for a while. I have listened to some of those over the past couple of days. He is quite talented. And on top of that, this Saturday night, Mr. Glover returns Comedy Central. He has a brand new one-hour comedy special on this coming Saturday night, which will be his first since the 30-minute Comedy Central Presents that most of us have seen, where he does the Obama impression. And he talks about some other things for about a half hour. But this is going to be, you know, him for an hour. So Glover is burning up. Community, I am a little bit distraught because I knew the ratings were a problem. That's why we talked about the show a couple of weeks ago. And what we have seen is, well, trying to put it against the Big Bang Theory was not going to work, particularly when NBC has never seemingly understood how to advertise the show, because it still always looks like on commercials, this is a show about a group of people at a community college, and that's really untrue. Still the funniest thing I've seen on TV this year, I think. It was so ridiculous.
Can we end the show on that song?
If you feel like doing it.
I'll give you a dollar.
I can't put Seal on here.
No. Because Seal's probably going to sue me.
Well, probably not. He's with Heidi Klum. He's fine.
He's got kids. He's got more stuff to worry about. By the way, also, today is the 36th annual Great Smokeout. So if you're smoking while listening to this podcast, you suck.
Smoking what? Cigars?
Yeah, cigarettes, whatever.
Really?
You didn't know that?
November 17th is a Great Smokeout?
It's just been going on for 36 years. Where have you been? Jeez.
It's also the date of a Greek uprising in the 70s. What are you talking about?
It's also the day when Demi Moore filed divorce for Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, did that actually happen?
Yeah, that's right.
You know why I didn't know?
Because no one cares?
Because I don't care.
It's also the day where Justin Bieber says that he's still going to take a DNA test despite a drop lawsuit from a crazy bitch that says that she had his baby. Huh?
I have nowhere to go.
It's a good day. It's a good day. Also, apparently, according to IMDb.com, where I'm getting all these news, CBS says it will air at least 3 more seasons of Survivor.
Good God, 3 more seasons? I remember watching the first season of Survivor and like, man, the over-under on this show has got to be 5 years. What has happened to this universe?
You know, you sound like me when I was talking about Smallville. I was like, this can't last like four seasons. Nope! 10 was the number.
Apparently 10 was not a good idea.
I don't know. I still have yet to even get remotely anywhere near halfway mark on that one, and I don't really plan on doing it anytime soon because I could really care less.
Me personally, I have not quite gotten far enough to the pilot.
The pilot?
Yeah, I mean, I've never watched the show. I have a lot of it, but I've never watched it.
So you're going to go up in flames like the infamous show Jerry within Seinfeld, huh?
Just the pilot.
Or the infamous show Lone Star.
Because he's my butler!
Yeah.
Also, kids, coming soon, Titanic back in 3D.
That just
if you missed it the first time, you must have been not been born yet.
That reminds me, you know what comes out tomorrow?
Breaking
Twilight!
Well, you're not going to midnight release?
Fuck,
you got 5 hours.
Did you read my Facebook post this afternoon?
No.
I posted on the movie theater's website that was advertising the midnight screening. Because apparently there's it's like an Easter egg after the credits. Woo!
Wonder what it's going to be about.
Imagine part two. But
did you read the book?
No, I read the first two, and then basically I read the first one. I'm like, all right, let me read the second one. I read the second one. I got to the end of it because I felt like I needed to get to the end of it because this was a phenomenon. And I get to the end, and I'm like, what the was I thinking? So then I make the decision, no.
No,
and
stop
that is
it.
The end of that.
Stop it. It's like you're hitting yourself in the head with a newspaper like a dog. Stop it.
Yeah, I needed some animal to come here, and I would just go on to my knees. He'd just start pelting me with a newspaper. It's just is brutal. But now, basically, I said that the only way that this Easter egg would be worth sitting through is if it was a message saying, we understand that we've just shown you the most vapid, superficial, brain-dead piece of fiction ever conceived by a human mind that depicts women in the worst light possible. And that basically we've decided we're not going to run part two or make a part two. And if you want to see how the story ends, then you can read it in Stephanie Meyer's book. And at least while you're listening to this brain rotting crap, you will at least be reading, which in its own, it does have value in itself as an action of reading.
You could actually also just, you know, not read.
You know, it'd be awesome. If the Easter egg after the credits for Breaking Dawn was the Avengers.
No, you know what would be awesome? If the Easter egg within Breaking Dawn Part 1 was the inside trailer first look exclusive to Blade 4, the movie. The return of Wesley Snipes' Blade. That would be miraculous.
Well, you saw that picture I posted last week that was making its rounds around the internet about this is how it should have ended. It's like,
I think it still should.
It's like Bella and Edward with Wesley Snipes behind them, ready to take them out.
Team Blade, what up? Fuck
Team
Blade. Jacob.
If you're a part of Team Jacob or Team Edward, I don't think you should be a part of Team Certifiable Total Recall.
If you're part of any Team Jacob or Team Edward, you probably didn't get picked for a team and growing up in school in PE.
Yeah, if you're interested in reading a vampire story, might I suggest The Solstice Chronicles, Book 1, which is called Solstice, written by Brian Dole, that was published about a month ago. We're actually going to have him on the show in the first 2 weeks of December to talk about the book and then rap about video games and film and all sorts of stuff. But his book's out. I think it's $7.99 at Amazon. So for the cost of the movie tickets to help destroy your life, you could actually get yourself a book. You also can get it through his website. It's like $20 for a hardcover copy. He signs it, and I think part of the proceeds goes to a foundation that helps feed people for the holidays. So pretty good either way.
Do I have to feed
way.
People for the holidays?
Remember Will Smith and them going to the shelter? Fresh Prince.
Did he go, or was it?
Carlton was there.
Carlton was there. No, it was Carlton and Hillary. I can't remember. Will wasn't there.
I thought he was there.
No, because Carlton did it for he wanted to get credits, whatever, for Princeton. He wanted to get like a letter signed, and then Hiller was there for I can't remember. I think it was for like her show, because last minute, like, you know, she wanted to do a story, but then like bailed on the story, and they ordered like a big catering thing for the homeless shelter, and then she started doing the dishes with the lady who ran the kitchen.
Right.
Does right. every show have to have some kind of soup kitchen like stereotype?
It has to have that episode once.
Yeah. Home Improvement did it.
Yeah, well, every show has done it. Saved by the Bell has done it. Family Matters has done it. All of them have done it. It happens once so that the writers can feel good about themselves.
By advising people to give back?
Right.
Ah, I get it. I get it.
You know how I have the problem, and I think I've told you this before, I have a problem with people donating money to charity and then running online, hey, I donated $28 to insert charity here. It's like, well, you know what? I'd had a lot of respect for you if I'd never have found that out. Because once you told me, you were then advertising yourself, nobody else.
That's true.
End of argument. So it's the same thing with the television show. What else is happening? Skyrim, I finally broke into last night. You and I have played about the same amount, which is to say not much.
Nope.
Because we've both had a lot going on. But as the holidays are about to come up and I have a few days, I'm going to be able to put more time into it. And of the hour and a half, roughly, that I've put in, I have enjoyed virtually every second of it.
I would say this. I was actually a little disappointed with the opening animations. Not the credits. Not the main menu stuff, but the opening scene where like you're the guy waking up and you look upon the character model in front of you. It doesn't look as sharp as I was really hoping it would be. I thought it was going to be like, this time around, Final Fantasy 13 crazy, like, you know, sharp edge and just realistic. I'm just like, wait, this still looks like a Bethesda game.
Yeah, I think that there has to be some kind of a limit because with the size of a game like Skyrim, like there's only so much space and there's only so much time. I agree, it's not the most beautiful looking character renders I've ever seen, but it's not ugly. It's not a standout, at least in that regard. I think the environments themselves look great. The people's faces still kind of look a lot like Oblivion, which you played a lot more of than I did, but at the time, it blew people's mind, and then there's been a lot since then, but Bethesda still had a decent engine, and I think this, from what I can tell, is more of a tweak than anything else. Now, the menu font and some of the way the menu works, I really like it a lot. But again, we're too new, really, to comment on it too much. I think probably in 3-4 months, we can have a great Elder Scrolls podcast. Right now, we're probably two people that have gone as little into that game as virtually anybody we know.
We're noobs. What up?
And proud to be noobs.
That's right. That's right. What else is going on in the land of sports? Tebow is 3-1.
Yeah, and he's playing tonight, and that's my boy. And, well, I mean, those are my boys, Denver. And, you know, obviously you have to root for Tebow because he's there. I don't know what I'm seeing. We keep winning football games, so that does count. But there's still, you know, that big rift between the people that think he can play and the people that think that this is proved he can't play. And I don't think we've seen enough to say either way because he's not getting the chance really to pass enough. He hasn't shown accuracy when he has been thrust into being able to throw him. He's having trouble hitting the running backs from 5 yards on out routes. But we are 3-1 since then. We were 1-4 before then. There's a little bit more interest in Denver right now. So, you know, it's not all bad.
No, despite him throwing 2 of 8 for 25 yards last week and still squeezed out a win. Nothing. That's okay. He's good. 25% accuracy is a win.
Well, two of those throws mm-hmm. were throws he threw into the ground intentionally, like called plays to throw into the ground. So really, it was more of 2 of 6.
All right, 2 of 6, 33%. All right, that's way better. That's an 8% jump.
25 to 33. Yes, that is 8%.
Yep. Look at that.
Look at you with your fancy math degree.
I'm just saying, it's like you get an F, and it's like, oh, I got a better F. Like, woohoo!
33% wouldn't be an F.
You go to college, right?
Well, if you took 33% from 100,
that'd be 67.
That's a D.
67 is a D in Western Kentucky?
60 to 70 is D, 70 to 80 is C, 80 to 90 is B, 90 to 100 is A.
Man, I should have gone to Eastern Kentucky or Western Kentucky. I would have been...
Pretty much every university is that way.
Nope. 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 You got scammed, sir. You got scammed.
NC State was that way. My fiance went to, well, my girlfriend at the time, close girlfriend at the time, went to North Carolina. That was that way.
Hey, well, NC State's got enough problems right now this weekend, so. Take it on the number 7 Clemson Tigers after
ready
one last
to shock the world. Mike Glennon
shock
run
the world
you guys out of the building.
With the return of Russell Wilson? No.
That was a low blow, sir. completely uncalled for. Look at you trying to be funny. Look at you trying to relate to the topic.
Funny guy. It's a funny guy. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, you know, whatever. So what else is going on? What else is going on? Any movies?
I saw J. Edgar last Friday. There's not much to say there. It was a good film. I didn't think it was the most terrific thing ever. DiCaprio was really good. Naomi Watts, who I've been in love with for 15 years, since since I saw The Ring. She was really good in it. It was, you know, it was fine, maybe a little long. It wasn't the most outstanding film that I've ever seen. I actually think Eastwood's done much better work. No.
Would you recommend it to a friend?
Depends on who the friend is. You have to have the right sensibility and care for watching historical accounts of a certain time frame taken from a certain perspective. It's not like telling, hey, you should go see Iron Man. It's a little bit different to tell people to go see something like J. Edgar. If you're the right person, I would say yes. It's that kind of film, though. It's that heavy-handed treatment of American history, particularly federal government history, and things like that. I think it was well executed. It spent a lot of time on Hoover's alleged homosexuality and things like that. More of that than I expected there to be, but it was still a really good movie. No, I wouldn't own it because I don't think I would watch it again.
Coming up next, we talk about J. Edgar Hoover's alleged homosexuality in the next 3 minutes on Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN. Yep.
Welcome back, Mike and Mike in the Morning, presented to you by Progressive Insurance.
We got that dude in the house. No, I'm just kidding.
We got Bob Costas, fresh off his interview with Jerry Sandusky. Which
No.
Simultaneously, one, Bob Costas proved how great he is.
That is true. Bob Costas.
All-time great interviews. It was one of the best interviews I've seen this century, you know, on any level, be it national news, anything. It was unbelievable. And at the same time, potentially the worst interview performance ever. And one of the worst decisions ever by his attorney to let him interview. And then you find out that his attorney was the one who was responsible for trying to get the 16-year-old to emancipate from her parents, which he defended the girl while she was doing it. Why? Because he planned to marry her as a 49-year-old man. Because
he knocked her up. What up, society?
Which is exactly what happened, and so, wow. Unbelievable. We're not going into detail except to say the only thing that
scumbags.
I care about in this situation is that my thoughts continue to be with the victims and their families. And by victim, I do not mean
Paterno?
Joe Paterno.
Absolutely. Okay. I hope people realize that now. I don't want to stay too long on this subject because ESPN's already drilled it to the hole.
Everybody has.
Lord. But again, if you're one of the many few people out there who still think it's a shame the way Patron went out, you're missing the subject.
Yep.
Just saying. Anyway, let's just get off that talk because I don't want to.
No.
I don't want to.
Got to see year one, so go ahead and rip Ben McKenzie and then agree with me that it's the best DC Universe film.
It's the best DC Universe film because, to me, that is by far the closest you get to without reading the book.
And Cranston is the shit.
From opening line to ending line, absolute close. And it's gritty, it's dark. And again, you know, voice acting 95% apart was fine. I know I've griped before last week about how I hated voice acting on most of these. McKenzie was okay. And again, you made a very good point when you said that he's a good Bruce Wayne, not so much as Batman.
It was the other way around for me. I thought he's a decent Batman. I didn't like him as Bruce Wayne.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Because I thought that he sounded like Ben McKenzie as Bruce Wayne. He seemed too young. And then I thought that as Batman, his throaty voice, he was able to play that a little bit better.
What about Will Friedle as Terry McGinnis? Who was better?
I don't know. Right. I'm lost on that one. I'm not sure. I'd have to think about it. But I thought McKenzie, he got better as Bruce as it went on, but the Batman version of him was better. But the star of that was Bryan Cranston.
It was. And then for the most part, I mean, it's more about how Gordon becomes right. Gordon, really, what the story's about. But it is good. It is by far, hands down, my favorite. Now I would say on top of Emerald Knights and Wonder Woman. So,
it's a really good effort. I thought I liked almost the whole thing. Loved the music. I actually thought the animation was quite good. A lot better than a lot of them have been. Less anime-oriented, which you and I both agree is not what it should be.
And I think it was short, like you said, but it got everything in the book right. Mm-hmm. So I have no complaints. I really, really cannot wait for Dark Knight Returns if that rumor is true, is all I got to say.
Yeah, and now that this is, I mean, as long as we have some similar, as long as they treat it the same way, Dark Knight Returns could easily be the best one that's ever done.
Right.
Oh. Until they do the Killing Joke and make it.
Or if they do Under the Red Hood, right?
Oh, what was I going to tell you? I was going to tell you that Breaking Dawn is out tomorrow. Is The Muppets out tomorrow?
Yep.
I actually do want to see.
I do want to see that, too. Actually, what's funny is I wanted to see this since I first saw the commercial when Green Lantern came out and they did the little spoof on it. In brightest day, in blackest night. And it's like Kermit. Right.
Sorry, frog in my throat.
I don't know. Something about it is just like, to me, does it seem like one of those things like it's about time kind of thing? Like, have you missed the Muppets or did it catch you off guard going, oh, yeah?
We've had this discussion through the years, but Muppets was part of my generation. I watched the actual original Muppet Show. I was still too young to fully appreciate it, but obviously I was a big fan of the Swedish Chef, and I was especially, and I always forget their names, but the two guys in the theater. Love those guys. And so, I mean, I like the Muppets anyway. I'm also a big-time fan for obvious and for the performance reasons of Amy Adams. So that certainly doesn't hurt. Don't have any problem with Siegel either, obviously. But, yes, I haven't seen the Muppets in a while. I was one of those kids that really liked the Muppet Babies. I was the right age to like that show when I was growing up. It's like, why wouldn't I want to see the Muppets? That's part of my, you know, my heritage, my childhood, my upbringing. I want to see how it's done. Particularly, I want to see this Muppets film, sans Henson, because obviously Jim Henson passed away. I want to see how they treat the Muppets franchise, the Muppets properties, without its creator.
Waka waka.
Plus, I just like Muppets. Mm-hmm. I actually think both films are the same because I think basically all the people that are in Breaking Dawn are Muppets.
Retract a little bit. Statler and Waldorf were the names of the two old men.
That would be the ones.
Anyway, Muppet Babies I liked. I think you got a little too much thing going on for Nanny, but whatever.
Look, man, those socks. When Nanny rolled in with a little purple overcoat or whatever, you never got to see her face, but she was clearly hot. She was in shape. She's wearing the white and
gold. Her ankles? You can tell by her ankles?
Dude, you could just hear by the way she talked and everything else. I mean, she was probably a freak. You know what I'm saying?
I'm so uncomfortable. In fact, if you agree with me, you can email ramorgan@ix.netcom.com. That's my personal email.
Actually, it isn't.
No, it's not. That belongs to Richards Comics and Collectibles, LLC of Richards Comics, 14A, Lawrence Road, Group of South Carolina, 29607, area code 864-271-1104. Let them know how much you like Nanny socks, too. I wonder if he actually gets like emails randomly from the people that we send.
If you're a girl and you're around my age and you're trying to make a statement, all I'm saying is you roll up wearing white and green striped socks and you can talk to me about the Muppets. You're already at least a couple of steps ahead of the dame. Unless you are, however, freaky and disgusting.
You know, over the weight of 250 pounds.
Oh, boy.
Nah, just kidding. He doesn't discriminate. He likes them all.
Yeah, whatever it's got to be. Yep. Actually, that isn't true, but...
Aw. You like ladies, though.
So, yeah, no Breaking Dawn, but yes, I'm going to see The Muppets because I feel almost compelled. I have to see this film.
I think if I want to see it just mainly because it feels right with Jason Segel doing it.
Yeah,
he
I would
really
agree.
Does. He's just so – he fits. He really does. And
this
I know
is
he,
his week.
Hmm? Is this his week?
Oh, it's his week. I mean, The Muppets comes out, and then he hosts Saturday Night Live one day later.
True. And then also not – a good week on How I Met Your Mother. Did you finally catch up on that?
No, I still haven't watched this one. I'm going to watch it tonight.
Well, then I will stop talking about that. Anyway, topic of hand today, we are bringing you a fun little special. We're going to talk about our favorite comics and comedians and maybe a couple of those who may or may not be overrated, I would say. Yeah?
Yeah, I would say one of the things that you and I found early on through retail when you became assistant and I became store manager for the company we were working for and started to actually talk to each other was that we both had an affinity for stand-up comedy. And not just the two of us, but also another good friend of ours and another good friend of the program, Kyle Dobbins.
Yeah, what's
out
happening?
There somewhere. What's happening? That's where we got what's happening, as a matter of fact. But you know, we listened to stand-up a lot. We would get together and play cards and listen to stand-up. And we always had an affinity for the craft that goes into telling those jokes and the difficulty and the skill that it takes. And obviously, everybody's going to have a list of their favorites and all that. And we have one, too. And we will discuss that. But I think this is going to be more of an organic conversation about stand-up comedy as a whole, the good things about it, the bad things about it, what has changed, what has prevailed, what continues to be, you know, what drives stand-up comedy in a positive sense. And there's a lot of stuff to like, and there's some stuff that we would like to see go away. But you tell me, where does this conversation need to begin?
I say no particular order. Okay, well, no, first off, we need to start off by saying this. We're going to have a group of guys and females, comedians, who we're going to call the Untouchables. These are those in no particular order or fashion that, without any of a shadow of a doubt, are in everybody's top list. You can't go on talking about comedians or comedians without having these people. And we'll touch on them, but at the same time, we'll go in more exclusive detail on like some of the reasons why we like other people. But again, I'm going to start off. Pryor is definitely in that list. You cannot talk about comedians without anything without Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor, and then I'll name one, then you name another one. I'll go George Carlin next.
Eddie Murphy. Definitely Delirious and Raw are some. Delirious alone is my favorite stand-up of all time.
It's in my top three, so yes. Let's see. I would say Cosby. Bill Cosby, himself, I think, is still my favorite.
I still remember that being my first comedy act when I was growing up. Yep. And it's so funny because it's timeless, and we'll get into that subject later, but it's just funny because he does it so well. To me, like, it's as if Cosby was the Will Smith of comedians. He's clean, and he's clever, and he gets away with it. And how can you not like him?
It's impossible not to like Bill Cosby.
Like, you're a monster.
If you don't like Bill Cosby, you have a problem with yourself.
As far as icon and recognizability, I gotta put Dangerfield up there. I really do.
I mean, Dangerfield is an icon. He's in the same way as like a Steve Martin.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, somebody like that. Maybe even Woody Allen. I mean, not really known for stand-up, but Woody Allen, his level to the comedy community as a whole. Lenny Bruce is the classic, you know, 60s and 70s comic. And he was a genius, and he should. I think he's also an untouchable. I would say Seinfeld's on that list for me, too.
Seinfeld's definitely on the list. I'm going to borderline between Robin Williams. I think Robin Williams in his early heydays, 80s and 90s, was really good. 2000s was okay.
Last thing he did was good was that Broadway special.
2002?
Yeah, I was about to say it's been about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Hicks, a lot of people really like Bill Hicks. I think people like Red Fox and stuff. We're not going to talk about those guys.
But as far as the untouchables, the ones without a shadow of doubt, like it's kind of like when Mike and Mike talk about what's the difference between an athlete and a superstar. Those who like mm-hmm. you know on like a Wheaties box, like basically they were comparing like if you're a guy and your wife walks in a room, not to sound sexist, but like and recognizes the person on TV without caring really about the sport, then that guy to Greeny is a superstar. Like his wife would walk in, watch a Jets game, and she knows who Peyton Manning is without him playing. He's a superstar. It's kind of like these guys. Who on a list would you say comedian wise everyone should know regardless of whether they watch a lot of comedies or stand up, period?
If I could pick five, I would say Seinfeld, Murphy, Cosby, Carlin, and Pryor.
Okay. That's a very good list. If you want to go a little bit deeper as far as iconic, I think George Burns for me goes up there.
Yeah, Milton Berle and George Burns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Milton Berle controlled television and radio during the RKO days back in the 20s through the 40s. And he was the most popular person on television. He was one of the people that drove the television decision between the networks. So, I mean, you know, people like that. New school people that everybody knows. The first guy that comes to my mind is Chris Rock. Without question. I think everybody likes him.
I wouldn't say like new school. I think he's more
I'm saying newer, like newer than Carlin and some of those guys. Last 15 years, it'd be Seinfeld and Chris Rock.
I think he's that generation gap, you know, because you had Murphy did his stand-up back in, you know, the 80s and early 90s, and that was when Rock was hitting his peak, was that mid-90s/2000s. I would say he's a generation gap, which is fine, and I think to this day, I think now, despite the shitty-ass movies he's made, by the way, this podcast is explicit, whatever, fuck him.
All right.
What?
Nothing.
Coming from the guy with a Dennis Miller doll, who
he's gonna be on my list. Trust me.
Well, he's on the list of Comedy Central's top 100 greatest comedians of all time from 2004, ranked number 21. You have his doll.
You do. I do, in fact. He is my hero.
Are you holding his doll right now?
No, his doll is still in its packaging, and it is in the closet, carefully. Protect it from the elements.
Are you ashamed?
No, I'm not ashamed. I just don't have a spot for my Dennis Miller doll in my bedroom right now.
Are you kidding me? You can't, like, find room for that? You should build your room around that.
Probably should, like a shrine.
That is the greatest gift of all time. That's the greatest find I ever have found at Big Lots. Are you kidding me?
It is the greatest thing that was ever in a Big Lots.
Yeah, that's right.
Except when I went there.
Ouch.
But yeah, this list, I mean, we're not going to go down this list, but some of these people will show up on this list and things like that. But I think there was a direct shift, and I think that comedy kind of moves in a cultural standpoint in terms of the way jokes are told and what kinds of jokes are told and things like that. And you had another person that gets overlooked that was big in the 90s that had some really good stuff was Martin Lawrence.
No, definitely. I mean,
he was kind of the successor to Eddie Murphy to me. He wasn't ever quite as funny as Eddie Murphy, or he didn't go to as much depth, but Martin Lawrence was very good. Run Tell That was funny, but You So Crazy was classic for that kind of humor. There was obviously a lot of that revolved around sex. He was closer to Andrew Dice Clay than it was to Aziz Ansari or somebody like that, but It certainly had its merits, I guess I would say. But there was a time when it seemed like almost all comedians were talking about sex.
Break this apart. Between the four of the kings of comedy, who would you rank in order?
You know I love Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey's one for me. I would say
him and Mac.
Well, Steve Harvey, I would say Cedric Entertainer, then Bernie Mac, then D. Hugo. I mean, they're all very close one of not saying that D.O. Hughes is like the worst of them all in this list by any means, like he's terrible. No, he's a genius too, and by God, D.O. Hughes is like a freaking like almost genius level, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
The guy's really smart.
He said yeah, he is. He says some dopey stuff about the world, but in terms of his comedy he's really funny. I think Steve Harvey to me is like a dirtier Bill Cosby.
Who, by the way, Steve Harvey is now the host
Family of Feud. And it's actually good.
Yeah, that's why I heard a radio ad for it, and I was like, that actually makes me want to watch Family Feud. Not Jay Peterman, unfortunately, or Louis Anderson back in the day, or Richard Karn, or whatever, but yeah.
R.I.P.
Aw, what?
I know, he's not dead, but he might as well be.
Don't do that! That's not funny!
If you have a problem with that, you can email Jason Martin, care of Certifiable Total Recall, a.k.a. Tool Time.
Care of. No, I was kidding. But, yeah, I know. Harvey to me was really one of the best things. The fact that his act, he can just lure you in, hit that presence.
Well, he's able to get multiple laughs out of one joke. A lot of people tell a joke and have a punchline. People like Steve Harvey. The reason I say he's more of a dirtier Bill Cosby, and that's because he uses some language and things like that, is Bill Cosby didn't tell jokes. He told stories that had funny lines continuously going on.
And Romano did the same thing.
Exactly. And Steve Harvey does that. He tells, like, for instance, the story in the Kings of Comedy about the church and Mrs. Odell stealing money from the collection plate. It's not one joke. It's multiple jokes within one large paragraph or one long, story or a page full of something.
Yeah, he paints you a picture.
Yeah, he can craft it, and he keeps dragging you in with little laugh, little laugh, little laugh. Big laugh gets applause, and then another couple little laughs, and then he moves to something else. Yeah. So many people that are like, yeah, you know, what about that, huh? And gets a laugh, and then moves on to another joke. Harvey, to me, crafts picture. Yeah, he basically does. He crafts verbal pictures verbal stories that are very, very clever and well told. And if you ever ask him just to tell a joke, he can do it. I've seen him improv and just start ripping jokes off. But I think that's his genius. That's why I think he's kind of like Cosby, because they both did that.
Everybody's got a mic. Everybody just jumping around. Nobody need that many mics.
Cool in the gang was unplugging shit.
See, that music was crap. You need a little Earth, Wind, and Fire. He actually plays Earth, Wind, and Fire, and people are getting down in the crowd.
I mean, he's not as much a comedian as he is. I mean, he's just a storyteller. Right. He's really clever, and I think he's overlooked a lot. But that's why I think it would be him, Mac, then D.L. Hughley, and then Cedric the Entertainer.
What I love, too, about Cedric is he, too, can tell a story, but he's so animated on stage.
That's for sure.
He's so animated, and he uses, like, whatever the hell's around him to build the picture, too. Not, like, just telling it. Because I remember one joke, and it wasn't during the King's Comedy Special. It was just one of his, like, you know, Comedy Central presents, and he's making fun of Shaq being a cop. He's like, now, why the hell is he going to be a cop? I mean, really, he's too big to be a cop. You imagine him, like, walking up to your car, pulling over a speeding ticket, and he puts the mic, swings it from his dick. And, like, he's leaning up against the stool as if, like, the car is a stool. He's like, imagine his dick being in your window, but, like, license registration. It's, like, swinging in the face. He's just staring back at you with the audience, just like, yeah, you know it. I'm just like, damn it. And then Bernie Mac, obviously, just his – the thing about Bernie Mac is his delivery makes him, like, so iconic.
You ever been hit so hard that you pause? There's a – R.I.P.
There's little white people in the back there eating their little sandwiches, little grilled cheese.
Eat your little grilled cheese sandwiches. Yeah, you seen Johnny?
Black people. Black people, we break.
We break. Break. You seen Johnny? R.I.P. Bernie Mac, by the way.
I know, seriously. What was his last? Was it Soul Man? Men?
Jackson? Yeah, I mean, he was in the Ocean stuff, and he did. He did Soul Man, and then, of course, Bernie Mac Show was a pretty big success.
Yeah, it still shows on, like, FX.
Yeah.
So.
But like I was saying, I had this conversation with you yesterday. I'll make sure that it comes out right, because it's certainly not meant to be insensitive. But there was a time frame during the – actually, it's kind of gone on for most of life where a lot of the dominant comedians came from the North. They came from the Northeast, as a matter of fact. A lot of them from New York, and a lot of them were Italian persuasion or grew up in Jewish households. And it would be, you know, even the Friars Club, a lot of their members were some of the more prominent Jewish comedians of the time. A lot of them were. And then you would have the newer school people like Seinfeld and Jeff Ross and all those kind of people that still kind of fell in with the same community. And the reason why I mention it is because a lot of those people talked about what was important to them and to the Jewish community. And they talked about family and all that kind of stuff. And Italians in particular were people like Adam Ferrara, who you would see him on a roast, for example, 10 years ago. Like, wow, he is foul-mouthed nobody. Then you watch – or foul-mouthed and just, you know, quick-witted and all that. And then you would watch his comedy special, and it would be long 10-minute jokes about his family that was very heartfelt. And he would say really nice stuff about his family. And, you know, you got the feeling this is a really decent guy. And that's kind of how it felt like comedy was. There was a certain mold that seemed to fit. And then all of a sudden, there was a random shift. And it was around the time when you started to see guys like – and, of course, there's people on the outside of that, too. Not everybody obviously fell there, but it seemed like a lot of comedy was driven that way. Your Robert Kleins, your – all these people who were geniuses. But then you had kind of a shift where – and I think it kind of started around the time you and I started branching out a little bit in terms of Mitch Hedberg. And who else? It was all the people that were putting out Comedy Central records around that time.
Oh, there's like a ton of them. I mean,
yeah, Hedberg, Dane Cook originally, Greg Giraldo, like a lot of those guys. Dave Attell, a lot of those guys started to move around, and they were moving away from family jokes and starting to tell. Their jokes were so outlandish. A lot of times they were clearly just total fiction. And they would be trying to tell stuff that was true that you knew wasn't true.
Oh, like, yeah, it was a lot more farce, and it was just a lot more dark humor in a sense.
Right. So it was kind of more from a straightforward perspective to a more insidious, more underhanded, more subliminal perspective, I guess. Those two words don't sound good. It's not a negative connotation. It's a difference, a shift in the way the jokes were told, and things started to change.
It's a shift really in like society and more like right. generation. I mean, comics are the same thing. You and me have had a discussion way before when if you look at comics back when it came out, and you know, Superman in the 1930s and Batman in the 40s, man, they came out, it was a classic, you know, either guy coming from another world saving us, or a guy avenging his parents, or some radiation accident, and then, you know, they became heroes to do the upright good thing. But you get to the point, like in the 50s and 60s especially, where it was so campy and so cheesy.
Right.
I mean, look, just Google old Batman comic covers, for God's sake. It's disturbing. It really is. I mean, you'll find where Batman and Robin are playing baseball against the Joker on the cover.
Yeah.
It's crazy, like the generation gap and the whole cheesy, oh, g'day, chum, did a good job, that kind of stuff. And then the 70s and 80s and like early 90s, more like the late 70s, got really grungy and really dark, and people were killing each
other. Well, comedy got more subversive to me around the time that Carlin was on college campuses and things like that, thanks to anti-war, Vietnam movement and all that. And then the 70s is when Stephen Wright and a lot of those guys took up the mantle, and that's when it got dark, real dark.
Well, George Carlin is a perfect example. Look at how his comedy was back when he first started.
Right.
If you looked at a photo between what he looked for himself, dressed and everything, and the way his jokes were, it's almost like a complete opposite by the time he ended his career, unfortunately. So.
Yeah, but he was a genius from start to finish.
Oh, no, exactly. He really is.
He was able to. He changed with the times. He changed with the times, but his underlying assumptions in terms of the counterculture and in terms of – it was almost like – I've been studying a little bit, but carnival theory. It was almost like it was subverting hierarchies. It would be either politics or it would be religion, which he obviously attacked on a grand scale. And a lot of the things that were supposedly the norms are supposedly in control, and that never changed. It was just that those particular items would change, so as a result, his jokes would evolve. But you could still listen to the stuff from the 60s, and it's still classic. Even now, everything he's ever done is brilliant. Except maybe Dogma.
But the thing is, too, is Carlin, his energy, his passion, you hear that. It's not just, like, I love Hedberg, but right. Hedberg is just, like, his streamlined, one-tone kind of thing. And what makes Hedberg funny is, as if like he has like no confidence in himself when he's talking, so you kind of just go along with the shtick. Carlin and like just yells at you, and he just his delivery and just his action, his motivation is so good. You can't mimic it.
Carlin knows how good he is.
I don't think there's going to be another Carlin. I really don't.
I don't either. I think the most confident comedian today.
Aziz Ansari.
Well, yeah, we could talk with him all day. He might be
Randy!
The Randy stuff was all the stuff that I didn't like as much. But Carlin was so confident, so direct. I think the only guy that, to me, ever came across that direct and was that pointed that's been in the last 20 years, I think that the closest thing we've seen to George Carlin is Chris Rock. Mm-hmm. Because he kind of has the same delivery. He's also forceful. He doesn't step over his words. He looks directly at you. He has his words picked incredibly carefully. It's like he never makes mistakes, and everything is crafted. It's intricate. It's so smart, almost everything. So, I mean, to me, that would be the closest thing. But obviously, again, he doesn't really do stand-up all that often anymore. So in terms of who's out there now that compares to Carlin, nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody. But, I mean, that's good and bad. I mean, it would be great to have another George Carlin, but at the same time, the comedians now are doing their own thing, and a lot of them are doing it really well.
But the thing is, like, with Carlin, too, is like it's really his delivery, especially when he's going on that banter and that rant, usually, like, towards the end of his shticks. You can't improvise that. As much as you want to, some people try to, it's like butchering the joke. It's kind of like when Eddie Murphy in Delirious makes fun of, he's like, I bet some of these motherfuckers are going to be making fun of my jokes and butchering that shit in the morning, huh? Sitting in the wild crew, like, and then he said, goony goo goo. All right. And then he climbed up the tree.
There's rumors he wants to come back and do a new stand-up special next year. If that happens, oh my gosh.
Front row. What? I mean, I will download it. I can't afford to go there. But yeah, no, totally. I'm all for it. In fact, I think the jumpsuit needs to come back.
The red jumpsuit?
Yes. You can still pull that off.
I know.
He did it in Pluto Nash.
He tried to do it in Orbit. Ooh. Number one movie in Puerto Rico.
What?
It was the number one movie in Puerto Rico for like 6 months.
Why do you know that?
Because we both had a friend who lived there who told me.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately. Damn. That's sad times in Puerto Rico, I guess.
So there was a shift. We had the Hedbergs. We had Dane Cook back when it was still okay to admit that you liked Dane Cook, because at first it was kind of innovative and different. And then you and I came to the same conclusion. I think it was, we saw his Broadway special on HBO. We're like, that's pretty good. At least, I would say around a month or two after that, neither one of us wanted anything to do with Dane Cook ever again. It just kind of happened mm-hmm. that all of a sudden, there's no reason to listen to Dane Cook anymore.
Because we got it. Over-energetic, same material. And here's the thing. Do you find it kind of a turnoff when, while someone's telling a joke, delivering a joke, when they laugh at their own joke? Maybe not just comedians, but like in general. Like when someone's trying to say, like they keep laughing all the time, it kind of ruins the effect.
Well, it used to drive me nuts because Dennis Miller used to do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he has since stopped over the last decade or so. He stopped laughing at his own stuff. And to me, it's made him a much better comedian. It's the same reason I hated Horatio Sanz and Jimmy Fallon.
And
all those guys on Saturday Night Live during the pre-Kristen Wiig, Bill Hader stuff generation, because they couldn't get through a skit without, you know,
looking at the camera
and laughing and breaking the fourth wall, because they just didn't have the professionalism in what they were doing to get through it without laughing. Now, I understand it's going to happen. Bill Hader cracks up occasionally. But right. A lot of times he's able to stay completely still through some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen. Kristen Wiig did it too, and to me that's what takes talent. If you're laughing at stuff, there's no effect. It's at that point, you're laughing at somebody who can't get through a joke.
By far, still to me in the past couple of years, I think one of the best things I've seen Saturday Night Live was the Jim Carrey episode, and it was him, Hader.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
In the little carnival ride,
that
just
was epic.
Especially the way like his movements, just like a freaking perfect robot.
I have long thought Bill Hader is Jim Carrey.
Like in the new generation.
He's like this decade's Jim Carrey.
I think, unfortunately, he's a little... Is he slightly too old?
He's
a little older than Carrey when Carrey had like hits, you know, his early hits like, you know, Ace Ventura and...
Well, Hader keeps put in weird spots in movies. Like
he doesn't want to be the star.
Yeah,
he hasn't had
the vehicle yet. Right. And I don't know if he ever will, but in terms of what he can do as far as a sketch comedian, he's one of the best I've ever seen.
He is
amazing.
But you're right, he hasn't had like his 40-year-old virgin or his
he hasn't had
knocked
his
up.
Ventura.
Yeah.
His
or, you know.
Up.
Or even for Seth Rogen.
Yeah, I actually thought his film was a 40-year-old version. I thought that's what mattered a lot more than Knocked Up did.
Yeah. You know what makes you gay?
No, I'm just kidding. You like Coldplay.
We did go to Coldplay. That's right, ladies. We went to Coldplay. What up?
We sure did, and it was a good show, too.
It was. We got to hear Michael Stipe or R.E.M. sing. Jealous? That's right.
Yeah, that
what
was
up?
Crazy. He came out and did Night Swimming with Coldplay. That was pretty amazing.
You remember the very end, dude? Was it Chris Martin's like, so I have a friend in the back. He's only going to come out if you guys keep applauding.
He's from Athens. I'm like, oh, my God, I know who this is. I was like, wow.
I think you were
Michael Stipe, wow.
I think you were squealing like a little girl. You're like,
I thought it was kind of a cool thing that he came out in Atlanta and performed with Coldplay, but
yeah. You remember what they did?
Yeah, they did Night Swimming.
And they did Johnny Cash tributes, remember?
Yes.
Because that was the year Johnny Cash dies. They did like Ring of Fire and like three other songs. I was kind of like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. Very good. You should have been there.
Ladies, swoon.
Yes, you should have been in my vehicle with me after the show so that I could have ruined the moment.
But you were not. Instead, he was with me and one other dude.
And we were getting takeout at Wendy's.
Did we?
Yes. Where else would we have gone?
You don't remember fucking... Like they did a Johnny Cash tribute, but you remember Wendy's?
I just remember we ate. I remember you guys were terrified because we were in Atlanta trying to get out of downtown at night. You guys were all Clark Griswold in downtown in National Lampoon's Vacation. Pardon me, Holmes? What it is, bro?
Hey, don't be saying that because I got to be in downtown Atlanta tomorrow. So
the ATL.
I am. Tell me anything. This is depressing or not. I don't care who listens to this, but going for a friend's birthday party, and we're starting off the night at Taco Mac.
Is that like a combo Mexican and craft store?
That's racist.
No, I'm talking about taco and mac and cheese.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't know, it's kind of like your Mexican Buffalo Wild Wings.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
I guess would somebody go to Buffalo Wild Wings on their birthday? Probably.
Maybe. I mean, people go to Chuck E. Cheese, those people call it pedophiles.
Ron Swanson on Chuck E. Cheese.
What do you say?
Just, I can't remember the whole thing now. It was like a paragraph long thing to talk about why government sucks. Basically, in like jobs at Chuck E. Cheese and all that. Look it up, people. Do your own research for a second. Don't let us be responsible for everything.
I want all the bacon and eggs.
No, you may have thought I meant give me a lot of bacon and eggs. What I said was I want all the bacon and eggs that you have. Do you understand?
I guess that wraps up the first hour that we got into. I'm sure we will cut into this segue. But one of the best things I've seen, and I still remember this, is I need to find it again, though. I don't remember what I did with my copy. The Aristocrats.
Yes. The joke from, you know, from decades or whatever, the inside joke in comedy or whatever. We watched that together, actually.
Which is really good because
three, four other people.
I forgot about this. Was like it was dedicated to Johnny Carson. And basically, for those who don't know what The Aristocrats is, it's a documentary about one of the most. It's pretty famous. I mean, everyone who goes into the circuit and goes into the rings, you know, in comedy, you kind of get put forth this test of you take this joke in which you start off with the same criteria. You have this guy. He goes into his talent agent's office. He says, "Hey, I got a good joke for you. Check it out." His act. Where a guy comes in, and you take it from there. You take it from that point. You make it the dirtiest, funniest thing you can take it, and just top it off by going, "You know what they call the act?" Pause. Get that shocking effect going. The Aristocrats.
Right.
You have such a huge list of people in that thing. Whoopi Goldberg's in it. Hank Azaria's in it. Drew Carey. Drew Carey, I remember especially because he did the little snap, and that's what started the little gag of The Aristocrats.
What was it? It was Gilbert Gottfried that did the joke in a roast.
Ah!
And he went on for like a half hour.
Mickey Mouse on acid!
Good grief.
I'm going to remember that till I die. Just that stupid. It's so dumb, but it's just funny because it's Gilbert Gottfried.
You know the first thing I think of when I think of Gilbert Gottfried?
Iago?
Problem Child.
Oh, jeez. How old are you? Jeez.
Old enough to have seen that in the theater and looked forward to it for 6 months beforehand and then left it like, man, that movie was terrible. Yeah. Then I went and saw Problem Child 2. And really hated it.
Yeah, because didn't the mean lady that didn't go John Ritter get squished by a boulder?
Yes.
That's right. I remember that much. But yeah, that Risk Crowd is so good because you have like almost anybody you can think of in this thing. I mean, unfortunately for me, Sarah Silverman was in it.
Yeah.
Who else is it? Robin Williams, obviously. Inside jokes, Don Rickles.
I mean, that joke's been done for like a century.
Hmm.
It's been on forever, so virtually every comic has experienced it in one form or another. But it was cool to have, you know, 50 really well-known comedians of today and yesterday all get together on this one DVD and do this. It was very cool.
Well, it was really the best part for me was the Bob Saget thing.
Yeah.
I can't remember who introed it, but they're like, "Oh, Saget's on this thing? Saget lives his fucking shit." It's like
his whole act is the Aristocrats, basically. If you've ever seen his act, it's unbelievable.
Because there's so much improv on Saget, because they keep doing like cutaway and takes, as if like he had different versions of the joke just off the top of his head. It was so good. And yeah, by far, Bob Saget is the most disgusting comedian you will ever hear in your life. So if you ever get a chance, if you're in a Chicago improv place and he's there and you want to get a good show, watch Bob Saget. It is utterly disturbing. You will never look at him the same. You will never be able to watch Full House. I promise you that. But yeah, speaking of which, what do you think to you for a comedian? What big attributes and strengths do you think stick with you as far as talent?
Mitch Hedberg. I love Mitch Hedberg, but he doesn't fall into this category. Confidence is really important. Mm-hmm. Also, being able to speak well, like speak clearly, not use the same words over and over again, have an expanded vocabulary, understand, use words correctly in context. And I think that the most overlooked thing, and it doesn't always hold true, I love comedians that don't subscribe to this too, but I like clean comedians. I like comedians that are able to skillfully craft a joke without having to rely on the cheap tactics of terrible language, offensive language, foul language to try and get a point across. Now, there are certainly comedians that are incredibly talented to do that, but I don't think that it is necessary. And I think that if you can get through acts without it, as we talked about with Cosby, Seinfeld, for the most part, did the same thing. He'd use GD once in a blue moon or something like that, but all these comedians that use F-bombs every sentence, I don't know what that means. I don't know if there's talent there or not, or if they're just trying, if it's more shock value than anything else.
Who was it in the 80s who screamed everything? He had like a little hat, little cap. Oh God, why is his name? Was Castan something, maybe?
Who?
Sam Kinison, no.
Oh,
Sam
Kinison. The late Sam Kinison, yes.
Yeah. The late, but I growing up, I couldn't stand listening to his act. I'm sorry. I know to some people he's in their top category, and again, you are entitled to that, but I just can't stand every other sentence. Like just staring, like screaming at you. It takes away from the material.
I would agree.
To me, it's cheap. It's kind of like if you're a comedian and Monique has a really bad problem with this, and I can't stand Monique sometimes.
How much Monique stand-up comedy have you heard?
Half of one?
Half of one what?
Comedy special.
Why?
Because there was nothing else on a Sunday evening.
Yeah, okay? You know what? There was nothing on because you watched nothing. What were you doing? Unless you're watching Precious, you shouldn't be anywhere near Monique's stand-up comedy.
She threw out the bitch N-word a lot, and it was just so much so where I just rolled my eyes every time, like, here we go. Tell you who I do think is clever, who I did watch right after that, was Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart is hilarious.
Kevin Hart is freaking gold. Yeah. And he plays with everything, with the fact that, like, his height, his kids, his family life. He's a good balance to me. He doesn't curse too much. He doesn't get too much into stereotypes and racism, but same thing with like Chris Rock and we talk about Carlin, where when he speaks confidently. And there's something about his demeanor, not his demeanor, but the way he carries himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that smile. He's got that confidence. Just exactly to get your point. He's got that like kind of like, yeah, you know what? This is my act. Got it? That kind of stuff. I like, what is it? He was making fun of Shaq one time. And Shaq was actually in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, everybody remember how dominant Shaq was back when he was younger, coming out. I was like, you know, can you dig it? But now I was like, whenever he said, and this is back when he played with LeBron and the Cavs. He's like, yeah, it's just like, look at him. He goes and makes a dunk. It takes him like 30 minutes to get up from it. And he takes like the mic stand and tips it over.
Yeah.
It's like a big tree falls down. Then you know, LeBron got to come over and pick him up. Like, come on, get you that up. And I was like, damn it. Takes forever. And you see LeBron cracking up. Like, yeah, that's true.
Then you got Shaq like, that ain't funny. That ain't funny.
No, Shaq was actually kind of sitting there like his hand over his head. Because I think it was like I think it was like one of his charity specials. So he just kind of like went along with it.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think that's a huge attribute. I think he's like confidence is a big thing because it makes it more, probably not using the right word, but listenable.
Yes. It makes it more listenable. It makes it more audible.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it more relatable. I mean, there's different things there. There's another thing that I like in certain comedians, and that is not being banal. Not telling the same joke that's been told 100 other times, but with a different punchline. Having something
like
unique.
Carlos Mencia?
Yes. We talked about this yesterday when we came up with this idea, but Carlos Mencia, tells the same joke over and over again, or he tells a joke you've heard a thousand times before, but this time it's Mexican.
Yeah, let's add the word beaner in there. It's so clever.
It's like you obviously would understand this, but I always had a huge problem with Margaret Cho for basically the same reason. It's like, this joke's really not funny, but it's Asian, and I'm going to do the da 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 da. So it's like, what is that? To me, that's offensive to her own, you know, her own heritage. It's like, because to get the laugh, she's willing to expose shortcomings in her own heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I have a huge problem with that, because everybody that laughed at that joke was laughing at, you know, we're laughing at the Asian stereotypes rather than at any kind of a joke that was really well crafted. It's like, well, this is going to be funny because I'm going to be self-deprecating towards my own people. I don't think that's, what's the word, honorable? Noble? I don't like it at all. I don't like it at all, and I'm sure you had a problem with it.
It's cheap. I cannot stand Margaret Jones. Some people think she's like the greatest thing in the world. Again, you are entitled to your opinion. I will tell you, you are wrong. I'm Asian, for those of you who can't hear it in my voice. Racist. Again, it is self-deprecating. It's almost as if it's hypocritical. It's like, I beat the stereotype because I speak better than you or most people in movies and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, fuck you.
Well, I mean, think about the difference.
Fuck you, you fat whore. Go away.
Think about the difference between Carlos Mencia and George Lopez. Like, George Lopez did kind of the same thing, but not always the same thing. Mencia, to me, never had a joke that wasn't built around some kind of a Hispanic stereotype.
Mencia purposely, though, tries to be crude and sometimes too much. Lopez, to me, has more of a charisma style.
Yeah, I agree
where
with that.
He's like that Steve Harvey, where he's got that smile when his delivery, he knows, like, how to hit that joke, and he knows when to wait for you to laugh, and then proceed with the storytelling about his family and stuff like that. It's, to me, he's got a better image, too, than Mencia.
Mencia seems disingenuous.
Mm-hmm.
And George Lopez seemed genuine. And at the same time that he would, you know, use his culture to get laughs, he would also build up his culture and talk about how they cared about family and they cared about these different aspects and things like that. I never really got that from Mencia. Mencia, aha, Mexicans with lawnmowers, laugh at me. And then he had a whole show devoted to it, Mind of Mencia, which I never really watched. A lot of people I know watched it, even owned the DVDs. It's just not something that ever appealed to me. Unlike the Chappelle Show, which I watched religiously and still do.
Different subject off Chappelle Show for a second, because we can go on that one. We probably will in a second. We talked about charisma. We talked about delivery. What about impressions? Are you down for impressions?
Depends. Donald Glover, yes.
Okay.
I really liked his Obama. I actually do that just kind of randomly every once in a while. I'll be like, as we stand here today. Like, he has really good Obama. Like, if you have a good impression, yes. Dana Carvey, yes. You can do impressions all you want, sir.
Okay, point I was getting at, Frank Caliendo.
No.
Okay.
It's funny for 5 minutes.
Yeah, but he does it. In the Madden shtick, we get it. God, go away. George W. Bush, go away. Go away. I will say this, Caliendo is funny. I've actually heard his CD stand-up. It's actually pretty decent, where he makes fun of Casey Kasem for a little bit. But at the point where, I think to me, Frank Caliendo sounds like, you ever watch those movies of like Date Movie? Or Scary Movie?
I watched the first three Scary Movies, and then that was it for me. But like, I know what you're talking about.
Like, on paper, the movie makes no sense, but they try to put all the spoofs they can in one, like, hour and a half long movie. It's kind of like Caliendo's act. It makes no sense in Continuum and on paper, but it's just there for audio reasons, to the fact that, hey, this guy's talented. He can do, like, 30 voices in, like, 30 minutes.
Thing about it is, impressions are funny as long as they're part of an act. Like, no, they can't be the whole act. Like, Dana Carvey can tell jokes without him.
Right.
But he can also then break off a great George Bush or break out his old Garth Algar or whatever it is, Church Lady, and all that. That's clever. It's good if you can do impressions to round out an act. If that's your whole act, to me, that, you know, that's nothing. That's a sideshow.
Mm-hmm.
That's one issue of Mad Magazine, and you're done. And I love Mad Magazine. I've subscribed to it for 20 years growing up, but it's the same, you know, it's the same kind of thing. I mean, that whole magazine's about spoofs and stuff, and then there's some good, Spy vs. Spy or commentary or Don Martin or whatever like that that's built into it. It's not just all the spoof. Mm-hmm. And Caliendo, I watched two episodes of Frank TV, and I was like, wow, I just watched the same 30 minutes twice.
Oh, it's Frank TV's terrible. Thank God that thing went away. That was not funny. Especially when he played everybody. It was not funny. Dear God, TBS, what were you thinking? Seriously.
They were just trying to milk, you know, milk the popularity or whatever, but no. And yes, we get it. I don't ever need to hear the John Madden impression again.
Ever.
Ever.
So, I think a huge thing, too, of what makes a comedian great is thinking on the fly and doing improv. Because that's going to happen at times. If you've ever done any kind of open mic or watch anybody, there's going to be a heckler or two, or you maybe slip on a joke. Or sometimes if you deliver a joke, and depending on the crowd, you may not get the reaction you expect. You may get some dead silence, some boos, some hisses, or whatever. You gotta be able to be quick on your feet, man.
A.K.A. Jeff Ross.
Yes. I know you're a big guy on Jeff Ross, especially with the roasts.
With the roasts, but also his actual stand-ups. Mm-hmm. He's just a funny guy, and if you've ever just listened to him outside of his professional act, he seems to be a really decent guy, down-to-earth guy, intelligent guy about the business, somebody who's really passionate about it, who knows a lot about it, who respects and understands the history. I mean, he's somebody to definitely read and, you know, pay attention to and things like that. But, yeah, he's quick on his feet. I thought Hedberg was quick on his feet, too, because if a joke bailed, he had a good answer. He's like, I'm going to take that joke out and replace it with a new one.
All right, that would not be on the CD.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
That joke would not be on the CD.
What's funny with Hedberg, though, is when he feels that vibe, and the thing is, this is what makes you a good comedian. When you can feed off that energy, that's just almost any performance in general.
Agreed.
I mean, whether you're doing for you, when you're doing a guest speaker or you're commentating or you're doing a musical performance, anything, like when you can feed and sense that crowd, you get that energy and then you build it up. And then that's what kind of just lures them into you. Because it's showmanship. You have to have that. You absolutely have to. I mean, I think to me, one of the ones that are up and coming to me, and maybe it's some, it's overhyped, I love Daniel Tosh.
Yeah, Tosh had a chance to go Dane Cook, and instead he went Daniel Tosh.
Mm-hmm.
He, if you understand what I mean. It's like he had a chance to go the wrong direction, and he went the right direction. There's times when I'm like, okay, I get it. That's a little bit more mean than I want to go with tonight. But he's damn clever. I'm not the biggest fan of Tosh.0. I really am not. But I really have liked his stand-up for a long time. I think it's certainly biting at times. And he says some things that, you know, will make you cringe, but he is just very, very funny.
Our mutual friend Adam, who is soon to be my roommate, who we've had on a guest spot before and who should be coming back soon, made a good point when we were talking about this when he goes, you know what was really funny? What was it, one of his last stand-ups? He goes, isn't it great to be white? just threw it out there. I was like, what the fuck? So, but, you know, this thing is like his delivery is so good, too, because he knows he's being mean. He's not backing off that.
His smile while he says these terrible things is what sells it to me. He has the same wide-eyed grin like, yeah, I hate you and I wish you were dead.
Uh-huh.
It's great. It's great. It really is.
And I love his take when he's obviously making fun of other things. Like on one of his shows, this guy showed a video of like this thug-ish guy, let's not be too mean about it, but he was in his own home showing off his, you know, mansion, whatever, and making it rain with 20s all over his place. Daniel Tosh took the other route, was in a nice little, you know, sweater, had his dog, and had a decent home, and he's like, see this pool table? Huh? Never used. See this money? This is a wallet. This is where I keep it. See this? This is my 401k. Here's my savings. And just basically was going the other route. I was like, it's just, I think to me, would you say in 10 years, would Tosh break the top 20 for you of all time?
Maybe.
He's dangerously close for me. I know on this list from Comedy Central we mentioned earlier from 2004, Louis C.K. out of 100 comedians of all time was ranked only 98.
You know where he would be right now?
Top 20, definitely.
Top 5, top 10. He's somebody that's breaking into that class with the Chris Rocks and people like that. I mean, Louis C.K. is utterly brilliant. And even though a lot of his stand-up revolves around, you know, the sex and the self-deprecation, overweight, and all that kind of stuff, the sheer brilliance that is his show on FX and the just the depth and the changes from episode to episode of how that show is structured and how this week it's supposed to be funny and this week it really kind of isn't and this week it's got an opening and this week it doesn't and this week it has closing credits and this time it has a stand-up to end the show and all this where he just continues to craft this unique experience from week to week. Louis C.K. and I remember Jeff Ross people saying, well, who is it that all the comedians get together? Bill Simmons asked this question. He said, who is it that when all comedians get together, they talk about and they're like, that guy's the top of our profession. He is what we all should idolize. He's the guy we should all hope to be. And Jeff Ross said, I think it's now a consensus that Louis C.K. is that guy. And I know from 6-7 years ago, I could not care less about Louis C.K.
Yeah, well, thank you HBO for that.
Yeah, and you know his that show was bad. Lucky Louie was bad. But his comedy specials, which I've watched now several times recently, because I have them all, are great. They are really, really great. But it's interesting to look at this list from 2004 and see who is just so far down lower than they should be, and maybe who is overrated at the same time. Number 99 on this list shouldn't be anywhere near this list.
Oh, that's mean.
I could not listen to her for 5 seconds.
That's mean.
I do not like Janine Garofalo. I do not like her with a box. I do not like her with a fox.
Ouch. So you would not nail her box?
There was a time when I actually found her sort of attractive. Now I find her morally, physically, and emotionally repugnant.
Did you ruin 24 for you, season 7?
Almost.
Ouch.
And you can mark the change in that show's philosophy in terms of how America was portrayed in large part the way it was portrayed in season 7 when she came on to the ratings decline. I'm just saying. Let's see. Number 100 on that list, somebody I kind of always quietly liked as a kid, but now he's a joke.
Which one?
Gallagher.
Well, which one?
What?
Didn't he... Wasn't there two Gallaghers?
No, there was Black brother? Gallagher.
Oh, yeah. For a spell show?
Yeah.
Well, how important do you think it is, and this is another aspect I was thinking of, is slapstick material? Physical comedy. No, we're not talking about like regular comedy, like Dick Van Dyke Show and all that kind of stuff. No, we're talking like on stage, over the top kind of stuff.
I think it's better served in a show format than it is in a stand-up format.
When I was a kid, I remember I idolized Tim Conway.
Dorf?
Yeah, I love Tim Conway, man.
Yeah.
Something about him, like, to me, he's had perfect timing. Like, just, like, his facial expressions, his physical abilities, just his falling down, everything was like, I mean, anybody can just laugh at this. Like, to me, it's classic in a sense, kind of like when you watch old Tom and Jerry cartoons, Bugs Bunny, and yeah, there's always a classic like banana peel shtick somewhere.
Right.
It's kind of like Tim Conway. He's classic.
Another brilliant guy who was really close with Tim Conway was Jonathan Winters, who's very similar in that regard. Robert Klein is kind of similar in that regard. They're all kind of the same way, but yeah, Conway in particular. Conway is able to take a stand-up act and turn it into a series of videos about golf.
Yeah.
And they were, I'm serious. I mean, just think about that for a second. Oh, man, number 76, I just saw. He was the guy that became our hero for like 7-8 years. We listened to him over and over and over again, and now he's not with us. But if you have not seen or heard Robert Schimmel, you need to go out and listen to Robert Schimmel. He's certainly not safe for work.
No.
Not by any means, but in terms of the jokes and the timing and the way in which he delivers, it's amazing to listen to him.
Did Jamie Foxx not make this list?
He should have, because I was going to mention him to somebody people don't think of when they talk about stand-up, but his I Might Need Security special.
That's what I'm talking about. When I was talking about physical comedy, I was going to say, as far as the current generation, Jamie Foxx comes very close up there. Like, the way him and Aziz, man. Aziz especially, like, he's not on this list because this was made about 7 years ago. But I'll say, see, especially with his most recent stand-up special, definitely is up there. So
it's my favorite comedy special since the turn of the century.
What would you say out of this list, or anybody even not on this list, take the top five, no particular order, overrated. Ooh, now we're touching.
I got to start looking low to the list to see who I think is overrated.
I've already kind of named one for myself. I think Robin Williams is slightly over. Because people put him in such high regards, I think that, to me, he's a little overrated because of that.
He's become overrated because he hasn't really changed. It's still the same thing. I'd rather watch Robin Williams from the 80s than I would now.
Mm-hmm.
So today I think he's overrated. He's a great entertainer, but yeah, I get it with Robin Williams. I would say that... Let's see here. I was never big into Kinison, so he wouldn't be in my top 20. We kind of talked about that, but I understand that he's a legend and all that kind of stuff, but to me, he was never all that great.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sarah Silverman's greatly overrated.
Yeah, I actually am 100% on that one. What about this kind of sticks out to me, even though when I was a kid, I really adored him, and I still occasionally will make my impression of him. But, Bobcat.
Oh, Goldthwait?
Yeah.
The only thing I think of when I think of Bobcat Goldthwait now is Police Academy, which I loved him in, but in terms of his stand-up, yeah, I would agree. But
Jim Brewer to me is a little overrated too.
Way too much pot humor.
Like, look at him. Of course we get it.
Yeah, we
look
get
at him.
Yeah, I would say he's overrated.
You said the other day Nick Swardson to you is a little overrated.
Well, he was underrated to me when I loved him,
mm-hmm.
when he did his first special. But now it's all about drugs and food and it's lowest common denominator humor. There's nothing there that comes out that I think, wow, that's brilliant. It's fart jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm past that. Maybe it's because I'm a little bit older now. Maybe I would have still found that funny a decade ago. But to me, I think comedy should be more than that as an art form. And I expect more from people that put comedy out than that. So that's where my problem lies.
Oh, I think I know who else to go on your list. Wanda Sykes.
Wanda Sykes is probably my least favorite comedian ever.
Ooh.
Well, no, that's Jeanine Garofalo. And Sandra Bernhard.
Why don't you just put Paula Poundstone in there too?
I don't like Paula Poundstone either.
What? She didn't do anything to you.
She didn't. She was just, her jokes were kind of funny for a while, and then all of a sudden they just weren't anymore. There's some brilliant female comics. Those four are just not them. I think Amy Schumer is really hilarious. And I've liked her for a while, but no. Yeah, Wanda Sykes, hell no.
What about five people you think are underappreciated?
A lot of people don't know Mike Birbiglia, and they should. His joke about moving the bed into the building is one of my favorite jokes ever, probably.
Mm-hmm.
It's just freaking tremendous. The whole, a few years ago, moving a bed into my apartment, and this woman who lived in the building opened the front door for me with her key, and she said, you know, I'm not worried because a rapist wouldn't have a bed like that. That's how she started the conversation. Now, what I should have said was nothing. What I did say was, you'd be surprised. Mike Birbiglia to me is really, really funny. A lot of people don't know who he is. I think that Aziz is getting more popular, but if you haven't heard him, then he is underrated. Mm-hmm. Because to me, he's just out of this world. I think Patton Oswalt a lot of times gets overlooked.
Yeah, he's very smart too.
Yeah. Anybody that loves Firefly is good with me.
I would say this because of the day and age that we're in, and if you ask current generation, and actually The Office made a good point of this a couple years ago as an inside joke with Kelly on The Office, is Bob Hope.
Right.
Kids today do not know who the hell Bob Hope is, and that's a shame. Bob Hope will go down in history, you know.
Two guys go together, Bob Hope and Don Rickles.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them kids are not going to understand, but Don Rickles is one of the all-time greats.
Mm-hmm.
Don Rickles is unbelievable. If you talk to comedians who are in their 40s now or whatever, they all idolize Don Rickles, and not for CPO Sharky, which was a good show. It was a funny show. Mm-hmm. But Don Rickles had the ability to listen to somebody talk and then be able to rip them apart right there without having to write it down. He was brilliant improv. He's one of the great he was all time great improv. Just unbelievable. And yeah, a lot of people will never hear of him. I think that I don't know. There's a lot of people that the new generation isn't gonna hear. I don't think a lot of people understand just how great Ray Romano is either. Like, if you haven't actually listened to his CDs and you only know him from Everybody Loves Raymond, which, unless you're like me and just freaking love that show,
Brothers Ray Romano's awesome.
A lot of people would say the same thing about Kevin James.
I think Kevin James stands a little awry to me. It's way too much of him making fun of him being a fat.
Yeah, I agree.
A little bit too much. Like, nom, 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 that kind of stuff. But,
somebody used to be hilarious that we both loved that it's kind of trailed off is Gafkin.
Yeah.
Because every joke became about food.
And do you find it tiring when comedians do the whole under the breath thing?
It was great because he was original when he was doing it. And then as it continued to go, it became less and less funny.
He looks like a polar bear.
Yeah, exactly. Again, his stuff turned into self-deprecating look-at-me humor.
Right.
As opposed to the jokes that he told in his first special, which I thought was just hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
His first special was great, and I just think since then it has not been quite that funny anymore.
Johnson, what do you have for the Hot Pocket commercial? Hot Pocket. Brilliant. What do you have for our Latino audience? Caliente Pocket. Get him a raise.
Yeah.
You know who I was really, really glad to see pop back out of nowhere again? Sinbad last year.
I actually thought Sinbad's stand-up was really good.
Sinbad's Where You Been that came out last year earlier is, swear to God, one of the best things I've seen in the past, I'll say, 5 years.
Sinbad got a bad rap because of A Different World.
Come on, you can't hold that against him.
Well, A Different World and his like choice of long jams,
mm-hmm.
and like odd colors and stuff. But if you've actually ever really watched his stand-ups, he is really funny.
He's really funny. His time, that's another thing, timing. You have to time your jokes.
That's true.
You can't just sit there and just, you know, throw out like a bunch of jokes at one time, blah, 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 blah. No. You have to, you know, build that story. And you know what, and I don't want to say this and sound insensitive or anything, but would he not fit perfectly if they redid like another version of Kings of Comedy?
Yeah, he could play, he could probably play well with Harvey.
He's kind of like Harvey, except he's a slightly more crude. But what's funny with him is like now he's like throwing in the fact that like he's getting old. And he knows he's getting old, obviously.
Right.
But his energy on stage is still so good, even though he's sweating like a fucking like ham in an oven. It is disgusting. But
you got to have timing, like my boy Aziz with his, how many people here haven't seen The Dark Knight yet? He gets like people clapping. He's like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? That movie's incredible.
Oh, man.
Now, if you, again, I can't say enough about Aziz. I just, that freaking special. He needs a new one, but obviously his work with Parks and Rec, which is consistently the funniest show on television and one of the best shows overall on TV, is keeping him from it. But I can't wait to see what he comes up with next as a stand-up guy. I don't necessarily say, I guess you can say he's overrated because people haven't heard enough. I mean, I'd say maybe like Harris Whittles, somebody like that would be overrated. I've actually got a list here that I'd asked a classmate who I have a lot of respect for in terms of his feelings on comedy, which is incredibly important to him, and he treats with respect. The list that he's got.
Give him a shout out, and this will be our question of the week.
His name is Chris, and he has a last name, and I can't remember what it is.
Well, you are an insensitive friend, you dick.
But his list, he's got Louis C.K., who we talked about, Mark Maron, who we haven't talked about. And Mark Maron at one point was funny, and then he became this political just guy who made me sick with his politics. But now he hosts this WTF podcast in which he does it in his garage. And it's like him with an hour and a half with some comedian where they go into real serious discussions about the craft of comedy and their lives and why they tell the jokes they tell and all these kinds of stuff like that. And apparently it's really good. So that's why he's got him on his list. And he's got Patton Oswalt, who I agree 100% with. Doug Stanhope, who I think is really funny. Chelsea Peralti, who he claims is probably the best female comedian working now. I haven't heard enough to know Harris Whittles, who I think is really funny. Aziz, who we talked about. Sarah Silverman, I'm going to depart with him on. Birbiglia, agree 100%. Dana Gould, I agree with. Todd Barry, that one's I'm unfamiliar with. And then, of course, he's got Hedberg and Rock on the side of people that are probably too big to mention in the list. But it's a pretty good list. Todd Barry, I don't know who Todd Barry is. I need to find that out.
Google.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember what about people like Dimitri Martin?
Okay, I got into stand-up. I didn't like his show.
I watched one episode of the show, and I didn't care for it. I liked the very first stand-up I saw him do. I think it's called Person.
Mm-hmm.
Or the first one that was known, maybe the first Comedy Central album. But I don't think that necessarily since then it's been to the same level. He went on Flight of the Conchords and did a really good job, and I loved his character on there. But, yeah, I don't think the show worked, just like I don't think Swartzen's show works.
What, with the gay robot?
I don't know. I haven't actually watched the show. I just, I don't know. Aww. I watched like half of one episode. I haven't seen the gay robot.
I was trying to think. A couple years ago, Comedy Central did a marathon of their top Comedy Central presents, and I can't remember exactly what order, but oh gosh,
Ryan Regan was number one.
Yeah, Mitch Patel was on there. I love Mitch Patel. Mitch Patel is one of those. He borderlines, huh?
I agree. I said Mitch Patel is funny.
Here's the thing. If you listen to him talk on a normal basis, like in the end of one of his CDs, it's like a 30-minute interview with, I can't remember who the interviewer was, but he's actually pretty, like, he's not retarded, like he plays himself on his stage. In fact, that's the name of his CD if you go look for it, Super Retardo. Because he talks about how people think just when they meet me that I'm retarded. And I would think if I was on a land of retarded people, I would be their king. They'd be like, oh, he can cut his own meat. He will lead us.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to say I'm like the smartest guy, though, because I think I'm the only person who ever got fired from a Denny's. They're like they couldn't even fire me because they didn't know how to do it. So they just locked the door behind me after I took out the trash. And I was like, hey, let me in. No, you're too dumb. Go to Wendy's.
Did you ever see Damon Wayans do stand-up?
Who?
Damon Wayans.
He did a long time. I know. I remember a long time ago. I watched David Allen Greer.
Yeah, that's funny too.
It's really funny, and he's got the thing too where his energy, man, that's a huge thing. And the thing is, like, it's polar opposites. But it's kind of like my philosophy in playing poker. There's no particular one style that is more dominant than the other. But if you have a style, then fucking play it to the bone.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're aggressive, play aggressive. If you're conservative, play as conservative. Or if you're really good and you're seasoned, change gears. But, you know, stick with your game. It's kind of like a comedian. If you're all about making fun of yourself and that's your image, cool. Go with it. Just do it well. Be clever. Don't fucking get slack. Be original about it. If you're a guy who's going to just sit there and scream on stage, well, you go Sam Kinison yourself to death. That's all I got to say.
What was I going to say? Who were you just talking about? Oh, you were talking about David Allen Greer. Tommy Davidson's also really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, it was around the same time that Greer was doing a lot of his stuff. Tommy Davidson did. And, you know, they were all in Living Color guys, so a lot of the stuff was coming around the same time. Tommy Davidson's stuff was really funny mm-hmm. at the time. One guy I love that a lot of people don't ever hear is Larry Miller.
Yeah, I was going to throw that out because I know you
I love Larry Miller.
Because, you know, he's the doorman, so.
Oh, look at you. You can't talk to the doorman, can you? Louis Black.
Louis Black's definitely up there for me. Again, it's that. The way his delivery, everything about him. The
difference between Louis Black and Sam Kinison is Louis Black talks softly sometimes and then gets loud for effect.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really smart, too. Some of his politics can get annoying. He's actually performing at the Ryman Auditorium in a couple weeks up here.
I would say this. We started off with our little Mount Rushmore-ish untouchables of Pryor, Carlin, Murphy, Cosby, Dangerfield, Seinfeld, Bruce, Rock, and all them. To me, I want to throw DeGeneres in there. I absolutely adore Ellen. I think she is a stand-up person. I think she means well. She's classy. She is freaking classy as hell. And I think she just, if I'm not mistaken, just celebrated her, like, 1,400th episode of Ellen. So good for her. Hope she stays around for a long while. I think she's a good representative. At the same time, her stand-up, last one I saw a couple years ago was really good at the end, where she did it as if it's like a business presentation. So she had two mics set on two different aisles and had people come up one by one and just generally got to ask her a question at the end of the show. And had one guy in particular come up and had a picture from way back when in the 80s when she had like super short hair just coming out of the gates, that kind of stuff. He was like, I saw you in this club and you took a picture of me and you were so sweet. She goes, really? You have it with you? She goes, yeah, it's been on my fridge ever since. He's like, bring that up here. So she had him come up on stage and they were clapping for him and everything. And the camera came up real close to the photo. And she's like, aw, ugh, look at that hair. And then basically signed the photograph for the guy, gave him a big hug and a little kiss on the cheek, and just, you know, you could see that sincerity in her face, that tear when she felt important. And despite, like, the success of her shows, her books, her daytime talk show, everything, like, as if that was, like, the world to her. To have that guy bring that sense of, like, you know, love to her. Honest date. I mean, you can't tell me it gets any better than that.
Agreed. I mean, she's not one of my favorites, but everybody I like's not going to be on your list either. I certainly respect what she's been able to achieve.
Yeah.
Without question. Is there anybody else that we had really missed on? And we should. I mean, we need to probably touch on Dennis Leary. No Cure for Cancer is one of the greats.
Mm-hmm.
That was just an incredible incredible special.
He's had one of the best roasts, too.
It was very good. It was an earlier roast. It had a lot of the people back from Colin Quinn's show.
You know, real roast?
You know, back when they roasted comedians and people that mattered.
You know, not
instead of shock value.
And Pamela Anderson, Courtney Love. And
Flavor Flav.
Hasselhoff.
Flavor Flav.
Here, you stop.
Flavor Flav.
Hey! Stop it.
You know, back when Adam Sandler did stand up.
But he's good. Tim Allen, I think. Tim Allen, he's what do you think was more? I mean, Tim Allen wasn't crude.
Tim Allen's jokes were about the male-female divide. Almost all of them were about husband and wife and, man, hear me roar. So he kind of turned it up for Home Improvement to be that and, like, how women perceive the idiotic things that men did and things like that. But it wasn't dirty.
No, but what was good about it was as if he took a joke and made each joke an episode for Home Improvement.
That's exactly what he did.
And that's what Ray Romano does, too. And that's what makes those shows so good is the writing behind the show and the basis behind the jokes and that kind of stuff and, like, acting it out. And between Tim Allen and Ray Romano, what would you choose? If you had, like, between one TV to choose, listen to the night, which one would you do?
I'd listen to Ray.
Hmm.
10 years ago, I would have said Tim Allen, but I really like Everybody Loves Raymond a lot, and I love Home Improvement, as you know, but I think that I love Ray's delivery and the way he tells stories, especially his Carnegie CD.
Mm-hmm.
He's just really – I like Ray as a person. I like the things he's had to say. I like the way in which he goes about, you know, his business, his professional life and all that. So I would take him over Tim Allen. And then, you know, I mean, in that same realm, that's where you get your Kevin James and
mm-hmm.
a lot of these other people who have made sitcoms out of comedy, obviously the most famous being Jerry.
Right.
And I would take Jerry first over all of them.
What's good about the Ray Romano Carnegie Hall City is at the very beginning, he makes it important when you listen to him talk about why it's important for Carnegie Hall for a second. For him as a comedian, for him as a person, and to any comedian. Like, that's your dream.
Right.
Is to be there on that stage. You know?
Right.
I mean, you're into music. I mean, what would be the equivalent for there?
I don't know. It's kind of changed now. At one point, it was probably the Whiskey a Go-Go in California or Wembley Stadium in London. I think playing Madison Square Garden mm-hmm. is probably still a really big deal for a lot of people. But there's so many of these amphitheaters now that it doesn't really – a lot of these classic buildings don't register anymore. For people that really understand music, really, you know, selling out and packing out the Ryman Auditorium means a lot, especially people that are around here. I mean, people would much rather go hear music at the Ryman than they would the Bridgestone Arena. because of the history and things like that behind it. I mean, like, if I was a comic, I would certainly like to play Gotham or Carolines or some of the places in New York that were really important, or maybe like Cosby and some of those people that did the Fox Theater in Atlanta and stuff like that. Like, there's buildings like that. I was going to ask you this. How much stand-up have you actually seen in person in your life?
I have seen Carlin.
Really?
Yeah, that was Peace Center.
I'm jealous as hell of that.
Yeah, and that was actually, I hate to say this in a mean way, it was right before, I guess a year before his health took a downturn, and you can tell. Because I remember, what was that one year you and me were hanging out at a party playing poker, and we were watching Carlin on HBO? And I had seen the act a year before that HBO special came out.
It was the Smoking's Bad for You act, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it was his last HBO special.
And it was, to me, sad because I saw it live. And I saw the jokes. And me, I was on the floor laughing really hard. But then I saw that special, and it was still funny. It just it didn't have that same amount of delivery and energy, because you could tell, like, he was just getting old.
Right.
His quickness wasn't there. His timing wasn't there. And maybe for me, too, because I already knew where the jokes were going. So I had already – it's kind of like when you see, like, a spoiler alert and you're like, we're good. I don't want to – you know? But, yeah, I've seen Carlin live. I've seen a couple smaller venues. It's like the Laugh Factory, stuff like that. I can't think of anything else, but it's live. You?
I've seen one – well, I saw Colin Quinn in Dallas as part of a corporate event.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I've only seen one real major stand-up show of my life, and it was at Wake Forest University when I was a sophomore in high school. And it was big shit at the time, and it was jam-packed and sold out, and a lot of my
Louis
friends
Black?
Went. No, he wasn't even near comedy by this point. This is somebody who now headlines in Las Vegas a lot.
That would be?
Carrot Top.
I like Carrot Top.
You either love him or you hate him. And here's the thing. Like, it became fashionable to hate on him, but I liked him. Especially when I went and saw him. I thought it was really funny. A lot of the jokes were hilarious. This is when, you know, he used to appear on MTV's Half Hour Comedy Hour a lot and stuff like that, where a lot of good people kind of started out their careers and things. But he's got a bad rep because of whatever, but I actually think his prop comedy is funny. It's not stuff that I, like, go out of my way to see anymore, but I don't run screaming away from Carrot Top. And I actually thought that show that night was funny, and I bought a t-shirt, which I still have.
How long ago was that?
That was a sophomore in high school, so it was 95. The shirt is gray. It has a carrot on the front of it. With, instead of, like, green top on the carrot, it's red hair.
Beautiful.
And that's
beautiful.
It. And then on the back it says Carrot Top, and that's it.
Someone else I think is kind of underappreciated, Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, Kaufman was a genius.
I love Man on the Moon.
Yeah.
We kind of mentioned him earlier, but we kind of said wait before Chappelle.
Yeah, Chappelle's Killing Me Softly is one of those in the past 10, 15 years that stands out as there's certain particular performances that stand out. Aziz's in particular, the Louis C.K. stuff, Bigger and Blacker, and what was the original one? Feel the Pain.
Mm-hmm.
Or Bring the Pain. I think it's Bring the Pain. Yeah, Bring the Pain. Chris Rock, I own all those. But stuff like that. But yeah, Killing Me Softly from Chappelle, way up there. And he was really funny, and apparently he is now like randomly showing up in stand-up clubs, like going up and improvising and trying to, you know, find himself, you know, after all the craziness that went down. But apparently he kind of wants to try to get back to stand-up. I would be first in line to see his next special. I can tell you that.
Norm MacDonald?
Norm MacDonald's an interesting case because he's another one where his shtick either works for you or it doesn't.
He's so unique.
Very much so.
You can't imitate Norm MacDonald. I don't think you want to imitate Norm MacDonald. Because
no.
His face, the way he speaks, his mannerism, is Norm. He's almost like a verb to himself when he acts on stage.
Yeah, and apparently he was on this WTF podcast with Marc Maron or whatever, and this guy who was talking to me about it was telling me that you see what a genuine person Norm Macdonald can be, and he called him a sweet guy. He's like, you would never see that, but that's just kind of how intelligent Norm is and the way he goes about his business and all these kinds of things. He's real classy and all this. But yeah, Norm Macdonald kind of falls through the cracks a little bit, but I would certainly say he's funny. Another guy who was basically an impression comic was Kevin Pollak, and Kevin Pollak was funny too.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Quinn's another one that's kind of you like or you don't like.
When I was a kid, I actually liked Louis Anderson, but
yeah.
I think to me, he got way too famous way too quick.
And then he got way too close to Jerry Sanduskyville, and then he had problems.
A little bit.
Jay Leno was all right at stand-up.
Oh, you know what? Leno and Letterman, they definitely are. And Leno still does, too, occasionally, too. He had to practice, like, opening monologues, stuff like that. I think he still got in him.
You've ever seen Jon Stewart do stand-up, like, long before The Daily Show?
Mm-hmm.
He is so smart and so original. I remember one story, and I can't remember where it was from. It was talking about this comedian that – it was somebody that's famous, too, talking about how he was struggling and didn't know what was going to go on. And somebody had, like, stolen his car or had been towed, and he had a bad first night and all this. And he said that he ran into – this guy out in the parking lot, he was just wearing a leather jacket, acted too cool for school, and just kind of didn't care about what was going on. And it turned out it was Jon Stewart. And Jon helped him call the police, whatever, and he's just like, just hang around for my set, I'll make sure you get home, all this good stuff. And ended up buying him dinner or something like that. And apparently, I guess Jon went up to do a set, and he said what Jon did was he got up there, and he decided for this show he was going to lay on the stage. So he just got up there and laid down on the stage, looked at the ceiling, and started talking about the world. And it was like a 40-minute set or whatever like that, and he just ripped it off, and it would be jokes interspersed, but he could. This guy could tell, and I can't remember who this comedian is, but it's somebody that's really major. And basically, he's just like, Stewart was brilliant. This stuff was off the cuff. He was just talking. And, you know, it wasn't like some real big planned act and all this. It was just he was talking, he was making doing social commentary amidst this comedy special in front of this sold out audience that was there just for the night of comedy. And he's just like, I knew that guy was going to matter, and turned out to be Mr. Daily Show once Craig Kilborn left.
We didn't even mention the blue collar guys.
I was going to talk about the one that, I mean, you have to respect what Foxworthy's been able to do.
Oh, absolutely. Kidding me?
He's the redneck Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, he always prided himself again in not being dirty,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And I really appreciate it. And I think everybody's gone through a phase where they liked his comedy. I always liked his comedy. Ingvall, I found funny for a little while. Larry the Cable Guy and me just never really clicked.
See, here's the thing.
Hell out of what he's been able to do, but the one that I really like is Ron White.
Ron White's good. Caribou Guy, it's a little over the top, and especially when you live in the South, the get or done thing can go away anytime. But at the same time, I mean, you got to give the guy credit. That guy is smart. He's a genius. Not Dan the comedian. No, he went with a redneck act and just worked that thing to the ground. It still does. People don't even realize that's not even really who he is. That was just a shtick that he did, and he just kind of went with it. Just kind of took the ball and ran.
It was funny listening to Jeff Ross when he ripped him at the roast, because everybody has a lot of respect for Larry the Cable Guy, like even the late Greg Giraldo. But Ross was talking about it. He goes, "Man, I love this new act. I love this Larry the Cable Guy. It's a lot better than your first act, Dan the Comedian."
Yeah.
Exactly. So he kind of made fun of it or whatever. But you could tell that Larry has found something that is profitable and marketable and that people love. And he's used it to make a ton of money, donate a lot to charity, do a lot for his own family and his friends and all these kinds of things around him. He's clearly a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like the humor itself. It has
Delta
nothing to do
farce.
With me having respect. Exactly. It doesn't have any respect.
Witless protection.
I just don't care.
Yeah.
Just don't
and
care.
A little, and I'm a little jealous. Come on. Just saying. Yeah.
But Ron White I always thought was funny.
Mm-hmm.
His first special particularly, the second one wasn't quite as funny to me, but I like his delivery. I like his voice. That's another thing that I think is underrated with comedians. The voice matters. When
it
you're
does.
Telling certain jokes, if you have a certain inflection or a certain dialect or a certain way in which you talk, it really affects how good or mediocre the joke is. Even if the joke's brilliant, if you don't have the right voice, and again, timing, as you were saying, matters, but I think voice matters, and I think that's the main thing that I like about Ron White is the way in which he talks.
Here's the thing. Take on the Comedy Central top list, take the top 20. You got Pryor, you got Carlin, Bruce, Allen, Rock, Martin, Dangerfield, Cosby, Barr, Murphy, Carson, Seinfeld, Williams, Newhart, Bob Newhart. I love Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
Letterman, DeGeneres, Rickles, Winters, Hicks, Kennison. All 20 of those. Oh, you can go with any of these guys. But the first 20, let's go for 20. If you just heard an audio clip for a minute of each one of these people, you know exactly who they are.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately able to pick out Roseanne Barr.
So, to me, you made a very, very good point. The voice, the distinction, it's a trademark in a sense. Your own power, you know, your own product, your own brand. So.
It just matters. And Hedberg, to me, had just – if something about Hedberg's delivery that I loved. And I like the way in which he did what he did. Dennis Leary's another one that stands out. You immediately know who you're listening to. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of comedians that sound like the same guy. There's people that look like stock comedians and have great voices, but you don't ever talk about them when you talk about great comedians. Like Brian Regan's hilarious, and people never mention him.
Well, it's kind of almost like anything like acting goes. You can be a really good actor.
Right.
But if you don't have that it factor or the look or the presentation or that charisma – then, you know, it's a shitty world, and it's unfortunate, but you're not going to make it.
The other thing is, if you can look at if you can look at somebody's act and say, only this guy could have done that act, or only this woman could have performed this act, a lot of it has to do with the voice and the way in which the jokes are told. There will never be anybody that can do George Carlin's jokes again.
No.
Ever. There's nobody really that should ever try to do Eddie Murphy's jokes. It's just no. There's certain people where it's just impossible. You can do his laugh all you want. Yeah, you can do that all you want. But I mean, stuff Eddie Murphy did. The stuff on Saturday Night Live where he played the white guy.
Oh, just in the commercial.
Yeah, well, just that and the one when he was like kind of like a documentary or whatever. He got on the subway.
Yeah, I love that one.
His Gumby stuff.
No, it was the day in the life of a white guy. Where he put on the white makeup.
Yeah, had the nose.
Yeah, and then he went to a bank, and it was a black guy, it was the banker. He's like, sir, I don't think we can give you a loan. You have no collateral. You have no down payment. You have no credit history. And then another guy comes up who's white. He's like, let me take care of this. Pats him on the shoulder. He's like, go on lunch. It's okay. And he, like, closes the door. Silly Negro. And, like, starts opening this safe behind him and puts, like, tons of stacks of cash on the table. It's like, just pay, you know, pay us back whenever you want. You know what? Don't even pay us back. Whatever. Then he goes to the bodega or, like, the convenience store and grabs a newspaper and a cup of coffee, has the change ready to pay the guy. He goes, what are you doing? Like, well, I'm just paying for this cup of coffee and this newspaper. Just take it. It's okay. Just go. Like, what?
He, like, takes it out the door, and he has this incredulous look on his face. Yeah. Like, really?
And I remember he walked real funny, like, his, like, ass was really tight, whatever. Like, you know, people always had, you know, that kind of stuff. And I remember at the very end, he goes, so remember, next time you were talking to a white person,
you may
it could be
about
someone else you might even recognize. Yeah, and it's like people, like, in white makeup disguises getting stuff on. I'm like, oh, my God. That and the Stevie Wonder stuff. Mr. Rogers spinoff. What was his equivalent name? Mr. Oh shit! What the hell was it?
I mean, that's when they had the Gumby Christmas and
Buckwheat.
Yeah, obviously Buckwheat. Mr. Rogers. I remember it. I remember laughing my ass off. The Saturday Night Live best of Eddie Murphy thing is great. Yeah, Mr. Robinson's, yeah.
That's what is it. He's like, today, kids, we're going to look at today's word. He comes up to, like, a little spell thing, and it's, like, scummy.
Yeah.
But he mixes it around and says, music. And he won't play this drum set. And he starts banging on the drum set, and all of a sudden it's knocked, like, ooh! And he can't bust it on the drum. It's, like, more of the whole, ah! Hey, then fucking Mr. T comes out, busting through the door. Did I not tell you to stop that? And he's like, look back at the camera with Mr. T's, like, hands around his throat. No. Yeah, Eddie Murphy, I just hands down my top. I love Eddie Murphy. Despite Norbit, despite Pluto Nash, despite Nutty Professor 2. It's okay.
Nothing wrong with the clumps.
Oh man, Axl Rose, man. Don't you dare.
Don't do it. What?
Axl Rose? No, Axl Rose, I'm sorry, fuck. Beverly Hills Cop. What is his name?
Axel Foley.
Thank you. Jesus. Wait. What was I going to say? Someone else. We're leaving so many people off this list, though. That's not even on.
I haven't even talked about Dennis Miller, but he may be my all-time favorite just because he and I are so simpatico now in our thoughts on the world and all that, and I still just love the way in which he does his jokes. But, I'm trying to say who else we...
Amazing Jonathan.
That's somebody I've never liked.
What?
Nah.
Wow.
I don't like magic in my humor, thanks.
I don't know. He's got a showmanship about him that I like.
If I want to see a magician, I'll go see a magician. If I want to see a comedian, I'll see a comedian. I'm not going to see both in one.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes I want a steak, sometimes I want a salad. Sometimes I'll get a steak salad, okay? Whatever.
You go ahead and enjoy that. I'm going to get myself a burger.
You ain't gonna eat no burger. I've never seen you eat a burger.
Billy Crystal.
Oh, that goes without say. That's a gimme. He goes in that list of Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I mean.
And thankfully, returning to host the Oscars. Thank you, G-Man.
Yeah, even though I would have liked to have seen Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, well.
Because I think he would have done a good job, but I'm glad we're going to get Crystal back.
Yeah, well, shit happens. Do you think Jay Moore belongs in the top 100 list?
At this point, yes. At the point this list was done, I mean, yes. Jay Moore is freaking hilarious. His podcast is funny. I like Jay Moore a lot. Love when he guest hosts for Jim Rome. Mm-hmm. I think the guy is freaking hilarious.
I like his tweets.
His following him on Twitter is great. Mm-hmm. Really great. You see some people now that you would see Russell Brand would be on this list now, and he wasn't then. I don't necessarily find his stand-up to be all that funny, but he has kind of become de facto British icon. Like, Eddie Izzard doesn't do comedy anymore, really.
But Eddie Izzard, I was actually going to say that. He's on that next, like, we have our Mount Rushmore and the Untouchables. He's on that next tier for me.
He's really good, and he's going to, because of his work in Oceans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was great stuff, too. And then, Gervais, it was more not about comedy and has become about comedy. He's great.
And he's coming back to...
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting.
Surprising, actually. David Tell, does he still go up there for you?
I like David Tell. I haven't seen him in a while. Remember Insomniac and then nothing else?
Pretty much.
I don't know. I mean, there's some of these people that are showing up on roast now that are supposed to be, you know, big-name comics. It hadn't really taken with me. One of them in particular, I can't remember the guy's name, but it's some really strange name. There's no Elaine Boozler anymore.
I love Drew Carey.
Drew Carey was a great, great, great stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. You know what I don't like him as?
Poses the Price is Right?
Yes.
You know what doesn't make any sense to me? The why Mario Lopez didn't get that gig? Because, you know, when Bob Barker was younger, people thought of him as like a sex icon because he had the clean look, he had that swag about him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we get Drew Carey. Which, Drew Carey's fine. I like Drew Carey, but not as the host project. And, you know, whatever, I could be wrong. I'm kind of glad, too, that he has that thing on Game Show Network again where it's basically just like Whose Line Is It Anyway, but with the bigger cast.
Yeah, we don't get Game Show Networks on it. Don't know.
You're not missing much. But, I don't know, Mario Lopez seemed like he was more fitting for that gig.
Well, he guested some of the times when Bob was off for illness or for whatever else was going on, and people really liked it, and that's why people thought he was going to get the gig, and they end up giving it to Drew Carey. And not that I hate Drew Carey doing it, I haven't watched The Price Is Right really since Bob left, and I used to watch it a lot.
It is so weird
growing up. It just doesn't feel right
because I mean it's been a couple of years now, and to me it hasn't transitioned as much as Regis and Kelly. Speaking of which, tomorrow will be the final episode with Regis Philbin on Live with Regis and Kelly.
I wondered if I knew that was coming soon. I wasn't sure which day. Who's replacing him? I
have no idea yet.
I remember Michelle Beadle sat in
for Regis?
No, she actually sat in for Kelly.
Damn, I missed that. Love Michelle Beadle?
Yeah. I was trying to figure out who was going to replace Regis.
I think they're going to do it like what they did with Regis and Kelly, or Regis and Kelly when they had the week or two of guests, and then basically they just kind of ran with who did best kind of thing. So I'm actually really thinking about looking and then watching tomorrow's episode.
Ah, there you go. Jerry Seinfeld is going to be a guest host.
Right.
Is Tom Bergeron replacing Regis?
That actually makes sense.
It would make sense.
Hmm. Who else is on the list?
Let's see. I don't see a whole lot. I see... They're saying they're going to do the same... Kelly Ripa's saying they're going to do the same thing they did before they brought her in.
Maybe Kathy Lee comes back, huh?
Yeah, well, she's doing today's show.
Oof. Really?
Yeah. Her and Hoda.
Oh, did you hear the rest of this list? Let me see. Among guests stopping in to join Ripa are Seinfeld, Jason Segel.
That ain't going to happen.
Kim Cattrall, Howie Mandel, Jamie Oliver.
Ricky Lake. Maybe.
I don't know. I can see a Howie Mandel.
Yeah, he's kind of a Regis-y kind of guy.
I can see that. Seinfeld, I don't know. As much as you and me both love Jerry, I don't see that.
I don't either. I don't think he would enjoy that long term.
No, hell no. But he's like all over the place. He's like top candidate right now, from what I can tell. Oh, Dana Carvey's in the mix, apparently.
I can't really see that either.
I don't think people would care enough to tune in with Dana Carvey. Dana.
Neil Patrick Harris, I could see.
I could see, but
Anderson Cooper, I could see.
Anderson Cooper, yeah. I can definitely see that.
Ralph Macchio.
No!
He's apparently really high up on the list.
What?
Kevin Frazier, I could definitely see.
You want to put some bets on this?
I don't know, because I don't know really who's in the running and who's not. There's just a lot of speculation.
Seacrest?
The first guest host is going to be Seinfeld Monday.
Okay.
Seacrest is on several lists. I don't... Sure, I mean, he's just superficial and vapid enough to make that work, but I don't think he's Regis. There's something about Regis that made it work.
Ryan and Kelly? Live with Ryan and Kelly?
It just wouldn't feel right. It's gotta be somebody like Regis.
Not necessarily. Kelly, I don't think, was like Kathy Lee. One, no offense to Kathy Lee, Kelly Ripa's way more attractive.
Yeah, I mean, Kathy Lee was hot for a while. I mean, she was attractive for a while early on, but yeah, I mean, she was never as hot as Kelly Ripa, obviously, but there is a rumor of Kathy replacing Regis, but I don't see that happening.
What if Mario Lopez did it? I could see that.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, we should put bets on it, put odds. I would say Bergeron would be like a 2-1.
If he has the time.
Right, with Dancing with the Stars and everything.
I would say that's a reasonable choice. If Seacrest has the time with his ridiculous radio show and American Idol and all that kind of stuff, maybe. But there might be some kind of conflict with Fox.
I would put like, I put it more in the double digits to one category. I put him like a 10-1 odd.
Who?
I would say a 10.
For who?
10-1 odd. Seacrest.
Oh, yeah.
Because okay. Everything you just listed. I would say after Bergeron would be Mario Lopez and Anderson Cooper as a tie, like a 3-1 favorite.
I mean, Anderson has his own daytime show now.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the stuff he does for CNN. So, and he's a 60 Minutes correspondent as well. So he's kind of all over the place. So I don't know. I could have seen it. I think Neil Patrick Harris is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That I could see for some reason.
Josh Duhamel?
No.
No? Michael Strahan? No.
Michael Rappaport? Oh, I just made that up. Had to get him in. He's got to be in every episode.
Terrible rumors are these? There's a Nick Jonas in the mix? No? Ugh. What's wrong with people?
Billy Ray Cyrus?
Are they trying to make this show burn?
I don't know. Like I said, I think it'll be interesting to see who gets it, but Bergeron, I can see. Neil Patrick Harris, I can see.
Dana Carvey's a wild card to me. I don't think people would be drawn in for Dana Carvey.
I don't know, because I haven't ever seen too much of Dana Carvey just being himself. because he's always somebody else as part of his thing, and that works. But I don't know, as a host of a show.
We should make our own rumor. We should be like, CTR exclusive.
We got report in that Robin Williams is in the lead for the new live show.
Comedian Aziz Ansari was found dead yesterday while apparently looking up show tunes for the movie Up on Fandango.
It
was indeed confirmed that he was only looking up one ticket for an afternoon showing to try and complete the most boring, lonely afternoon of all time.
Seinfeld, Jerry, live with Jerry and Kelly.
I'd like to see live with Ron Swanson and Kelly. Not Nick Offerman, but Ron Swanson.
Oh, nice.
Joel McHale, I could see. I just kind of made that up, but I could see that.
See that? Especially he needs something to stick around with on NBC.
Well, that show's not NBC, is it? It's ABC, right?
Live?
Yeah.
No, Live's NBC.
It used to be ABC, so I guess it's moved.
No, it didn't. It was CBS.
Live with Regis and Kelly?
Yeah, it was CBS. It used to be CBS, and it was on NBC.
At ABC, it must have started on ABC then.
Man,
CBS used to run CBS this morning.
Smith. You want to do this? You want to do this? Live. I'm a slow type. You're going to look this up.
I just know at one point it was on ABC. Because that's the time I watched it. Actually, I watched it every once in a while. It was on ABC.
You old bastard. Live Regis and Kathy Lee. Let's see. Yeah, I guess originally it did. But the transition, I know, because now it is on NBC, because I know sometimes I get really bored in the break room at work, and I'll catch Rachel Ray right afterwards on it. Or Today Show and then Rachel Ray. So, don't judge me. But, yeah. So, anything else we want to hit before we wrap this up on comedians and our top list and overhyped and all that jazz?
Give me your current three favorite comedians, and I'll do the same, and then we'll call this a wrap.
All time would be Seinfeld, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor.
Okay.
What about current? current, Aziz, Louis C.K., and, man, I really do like, I love Mitch Patel. I think he's, if you can find him doing something, just gotta go see the show.
You said Aziz.
Louis C.K.
Yeah, those two are mine, are on mine, and, I really like Donald Glover's 30 minute. I want to see his hour this weekend to see if he keeps it rolling. If he does, then he's certainly going to be somebody that's going to be moving up. I might, I don't know. I'd have to think about the third one. Like, all time, it's hard to decide because those three are great choices. I want to throw Carlin and Bill Cosby in there. But it's hard to say because it's not like those three are the only three. There's a lot of people that you liked. I would say, I love Pryor. Eddie Murphy might be my all-timer, along with Cosby and Seinfeld. So I might go Cosby, Carlin, and Seinfeld, or Cosby, Seinfeld, and Murphy. Somewhere in that. Yeah, it's all around the same. Again, that's why these people were on Mount Rushmore, because it would have been a boring conversation if that's all we ever talked about.
Right.
So we hopefully talked about some people that you either haven't heard or reminded you of, oh, yeah, that guy is funny. I should listen to him more. And, of course, we missed 1,000. If you want to rip us for those, ctrpod@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at ctrpodcast, or you can rip us on Facebook by searching Certifiable Total Recall, and you will find us there, and you can join in on the fun. But so this was cool, a little bit of a change. Where are we going to go next week, or do we have a clue yet?
I have no idea. These ideas just come to us, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, ideas just come to us. We are two wild and crazy guys.
Hey, Steve Martin and Bill Kristol.
Me, Dan Aykroyd?
Hmm?
Dan Aykroyd?
Always remembered. For some reason, I guess I got it wrong. Yeah.
Two wild and crazy guys.
I thought it was Steve Martin and Billy Kristol.
I'm sorry, alive?
Yeah.
That was Dan Aykroyd.
Really?
Google it.
I mean, guess I'll look that up.
Guess you will. Well, on that final note, while Jason is Googling, I have been Andrew Van of the CTR, Certified Episode Recall Podcast.
Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd, yes.
Yep. We are the – I am one half of the Moops with my partner in crime.
Jason Martin here in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Again, this has been fun. Next week is Thanksgiving, so if you're going to be on the roads, certainly be careful doing so. This will probably get posted, actually, probably a day before you leave for Thanksgiving. I'm going to try and get this up for us by Tuesday or Wednesday. That way, if you're a complete loser, you can listen to us on the way to your Thanksgiving.
That's right. And if you're also a complete loser, you can find me on AVAN360 on Facebook, Twitter, and at Gmail. You can find the show at Certifiable Total Recall on Facebook and on iTunes and on our website, ctr.podomatic.com. Find Jason Martin at his home at – no, I'm just kidding. I don't know your home address, but that would be kind of weird.
Yeah,
I'm
glad you didn't feel the need to give that out anyway.
That is true because you do sleep in the nude.
No, I don't.
Okay, well, you don't sleep in the nude. You're missing out. But you can find him also at jmart100 on Facebook, on Twitter, and email us at ctrpod@gmail, if I'm mistaken.
So this weekend, if we had to give you a couple things to pay attention to, we would say The Muppets.
Yes.
Donald Glover's comedy special Saturday night on Comedy Central. I think it's 10 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night. And what else? One other thing.
Your old alumnus versus the Clemson Tigers.
And my new alumnus versus North Texas as well.
There you go.
And what's going on in NFL? What are your Rams doing?
Sucking.
What about your Falcons?
No, the Rams are playing they're playing the Seahawks at home. I know that. I can't remember who the Falcons play off the top of my head. I don't think it's a division game. I know your boys are currently playing right now, the Broncos.
Tied
3-3
at the half.
Look at that. Look at that high scoring game. Two of the worst quarterbacks in the league going at it.
I don't know what you're talking about. Sanchez, yes, but the other guy
Tebow's 3-1.
Other guy 6-2 as a starter.
Yeah, there's 3-1 odds. They're about the same there. But again, you're fine.
I was going to say, if you want to check out good music, I will throw this final thing out at you. This Childish Gambino CD, the actual first release that launched Tuesday, is awesome. And it's around $9.99, or you can get it on Amazon for $7.99. But if you go to the store, it's $10. Donald Glover's rap album, it's really badass. Might want to give it a shot. But so there you go. I'm going to go watch apparently a terrible episode of How I Met Your Mother.
Do it. And you'll cry. I'm sure you'll text me and go, what the hell? But anyway, we have been another edition of the CTR, Certifiable Total Recall Podcast. Again, I'm Andrew Van with my partner, Jason Martin, for another edition of CTR, Certifiable Total Recall. We out!